Good evening and welcome to the Thursday, April 13th meeting of the Board of Directors. This is our general meeting. Mrs. Vega, can we have a roll call?
Director Tacker?
Here.
Vice President Fouché?
Here.
Director Sesenia?
Here.
President Schicker?
Here. Director Sennett is sick this evening. He's watching from home. And I promised I'd call him up if there was anything I wanted him to come down and say. So, otherwise, he's resting, and we hope he gets better soon. Okay, Mr. Blesky, do we want to go through the agenda really quick and talk through what we're going to do and not do tonight?
Yes, Madam President. There's a couple of items that I'd like to recommend that we move to next Thursday. But first, early, I'd just like to make a couple of notes on the present talk. The other one is committee reports. We have some committee reports that came in late, and I know there was going to be some verbal reports. But at the board's discretion and yours, Madam President, we can also do those next Thursday if you prefer. The item, when we get down to the consent calendar, item 5 and item 6, we've recommended to go to the Finance Committee on Monday. So I recommend that we move that to next Thursday. Item 7 as well, the minutes. We have some completed. We'd like to adopt those and approve those as a package. At your option on item 8, the paving for the award of the paving, that could be moved as well to next Thursday. You do have a staff report. As well as item 9 for in situ engineering. However, we do recommend that we consider item number 10. And we can discuss that prior to making a decision on how we modify the agenda. Also, item 11, I would recommend that we consider this evening as part of consent. And I can answer any questions on those two. And item 12 does need to be moved to next Thursday because we're completing a number of issues relating to mapping our cash accounts to our reserves and our budget documents, and that one definitely needs to be moved to next Thursday. And with this, I'd like to, you know, we can discuss anything, and we do have an open session this evening for the public and provide plenty of time for them to comment after we have our presentations and any items that you may choose to consider this evening.
Director Sesenia, did you have a comment?
Yes. It seems that we've got staff here ready to do utilities and maybe the fire reports. If they're ready, I don't know why we couldn't do that. And then number 8, why did we want to continue that?
I believe that in, Director Tacker, you may want to go ahead and comment on that because we had a conversation.
Our Emergency Services Committee meeting is next Tuesday. It would be nice to run this through the committee one time before the board considers it.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from the board? I would like to take the reports that are available tonight on written administrative, CDF, and utilities, and take all the other of your recommendations with one question, and I didn't get clear. Are we adopting some of the minutes tonight or adopting them all next week when they're ready for all?
All next week, please.
Okay, so we're moving 7, 8, 9, and 12, and we're taking part and 5 and 6. We're just moving them all to April 20th. Mrs. Vega?
I just wanted to let the directors know that on your table.
Here, let's use this one.
Should be. Okay. No, I got it.
Can you hear me now? Yes. I would like the directors to know that I think it was the March 3rd meeting, the directors, was it March 3rd or April?
If they want to make public comment, but we are going to not do any decisions tonight. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam President. That's normally the way that you've, that's the policy we've had at our board meetings.
Okay. Do you need a board action to change the agenda or just? Do we need to? I just did it. Okay. So with that, Mr. Boykin, would you like to do your presentation?
Madam President, I may be making a little bit of noise here while I call up our attorney.
Pardon me?
Our microphone.
Okay. Shall we wait? Would you wait just a second, just in case? Okay, just for the benefit of the audience, Mrs. Biggs is on the line. We have an attorney present by telephone tonight. Okay, Mr. Boykin.
What audience? Sam Boykin, Solid Waste Coordinator for CSD.
Just a second. Back of the room. I can't hear Mr. Boykin. Thank you.
First of all, I want to thank the residents for taking advantage of Mission Country cleanup week on a day of that pickup that I think was very successful. We're now working on the CSD cleanup April 22nd and 23rd. As I said before, it's always been nice to have the board members there, either one or both days, just show up for a while and contribute. I've been basically ill all year, and I really been ill this week and hoping to get better. So when I left work today, I went home and I told my wife I'm going to bed. Everything's gone fine. Like I said, traditionally, the board member has always shown up to help out. And at present, we only have one volunteer from the outside other than the utility yard people helping out. And they would drive the vehicles, the trailers, to pick up equipment from the residents. I'll say everything is going well. We are having limited pickups. And how limited going to be, I don't know. Because I don't have any, no one has stepped forward to volunteer that vehicle, or even to volunteer to help unload the stuff that we get. As I said, I have one resident so far that has volunteered to help out. We're working from 8 to 4 p.m. daily. And once again, we have three rented trailers right now to tow behind the utilities trucks. And one resident from the outside has volunteered his trailer. So I'm going to let you know that we put these things on, but in a sense, it's really not easy. Because when you talk to me, I have to translate this data to a card that I give to each driver. And I have to pair up two people per vehicle. And so right now I have, matter of fact, just send two people. My utility guys are out in the field. So have nobody helping me to man the roll off to let people know that where to put stuff and this type thing. I'll help them load it. So I really need your help. Now, I'd like to reiterate, traditionally, the board member has always volunteered for cleanup and chipping days. We'll talk about chipping days later because right now that's in jeopardy, okay? So if you can, please show up 1 or 2 hours. And by the way, the CSD cleanup committee, they're providing lunch, 1 half-hour lunch. This year, we are having pizza. So come and volunteer, get involved. and show me and the community that you do care. Questions, please.
Questions, please. Director Decker.
Mr. Boykin, can you give the telephone number for volunteers to call you?
Yes. Call the office at 528-9435. Again, 528-9435. And also, let me give you my cell also. I have my cell on all the time. My cell is 748-2464. So any time will help, because right now, in a sense, we are in trouble with volunteers.
It sounds like it, yeah. We need some more volunteers.
Yes.
We do.
Again? Oh, Mr. Taylor wants to hear the phone number again, the cell number again.
Again, my cell is 748-2464. 748-2464. And my office phone is 528-9435. And what I've done, I rid of my time for working from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to daily. But what I do, I increase my time. I always change my time having events. So this morning I was in the office at 7 a.m. this morning. And I'll probably do that again tomorrow morning. But first thing I do when I get in the office, I start answering my messages, recording things down. And then I have to call the people back.
One more thing. Yes. Again, if you could give the dates.
Yes.
And the times.
April 22nd and April 23rd, that's Saturday and Sunday.
So the volunteers now know that it's Saturday and Sunday. And
time?
Starting at 8 in the morning?
Yes.
Till 4 in the afternoon?
Yes.
And they'll serve you lunch?
Yes.
So I like that.
Lunch, water.
Well, I like.
And get aid.
Director Cesena?
Let me make sure I have this straight, Sam. The options are what we'd like.
I work on Saturday, but I'll be there Sunday morning.
All right, thank you.
Vice President, you sure?
I'll be there around lunchtime for an hour. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I'll give you a hand. I'll be there Saturday.
Okay. And also, Starbucks has donated coffee. So we have coffee Saturday morning, but not know about Sunday. She has walked in office one day last week and said, I'd like to donate coffee. So muffins. And we also have donuts. Carl Locke is donating, two dozen donuts for Saturday. I'm buying two dozen for Sunday.
John will be there for sure now.
Okay. And you're looking for citizen volunteers as well?
Yes. Very much so.
Yeah, so everybody, let's all help out. This is such a great thing. We don't want to lose it. And Sam, I'm sorry you're sick. It's hard to work right when you're sick, and I surely appreciate what you're doing, and I know it's hard. So hopefully you'll get better by next week,
and
we'll
help
pitch in where we can.
All right.
And citizens, please help if you can.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, if I'd just like to comment, don't go away, Sam. You know, I come from an area that's a lot more populated, and I'm really envious of Los Osos. And one of the things that's real interesting is Mr. Boykin's here. He comes in every day, never complains, works very hard to coordinate these things. A lot of it goes unnoticed. And he doesn't ask for anything other than to get his job done. And it's just really, truly a pleasure to have a gentleman like this working so hard behind the scenes to set this up. The one thing that's happened this time is that we've lost one of our resources in the conservation.
Yes.
And that's really hurt the community a little bit. I mean, they have things they have to do, too, and we understand that. But one thing that I'm really envious of is that you have the opportunity for neighbors to get together and have this service, which only towns like Los Osos get things like this, and chipping days, just the sound of it sounds like it's going to be a party. I know it's hard work, but it would be a real shame to waste all the hard work and the good effort that Sam and those that have helped him have done, because it really is a great service, and he deserves a lot of credit. Like I said, he's truly a gentleman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Now you can go home and get some rest. Okay. Mr. Blesky, who is our next presentation going to be given by?
Well, I have a I'm going to make an announcement here because I'm kind of a little, I'm feeling pretty good this week. I know that the community and the district has gone through a lot and we have a long way to go. In light of awarding our consulting contract for our project report, which was well received by the regional board staff last Friday, we've had a truly significant event today, and it's a small thing in some comparison, but nobody else has done it. No previous CSD, the county didn't get there, but today we installed a piranha system. We, and I mean collectively, all the people, and there's a lot of people, and it'll be what it's going to be, and the data that we'll generate, even the regional board is very interested in it. So today was a quiet, exciting day. With that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Dan Wickham with Piranha Systems, and he has an entourage here, and they're just here to so you can meet him again and just kind of answer questions and let you know what we accomplished today. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. And really, I'd like to thank the board and the local community for providing us an opportunity to actually demonstrate our technology. We really have always felt that, you know, it's money you put... You have to actually show what you can do. It's not enough to tell people. Sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and say, okay, now it's the time for the demonstration. So we were happy today. And the other thing about it was the Al Septic Service and George's Plumbing were right there with us, and they donated a lot of their time, their product, and everything else to get this going. I came right off the job site and sort of see my dirty pants and everything else. But it was exciting, and it's something that we always do. And you've got to get your hands dirty when you're working with septic, and everybody knows that. But Dan pointed out that this really was the first time the community has done real remediation, really for 30 years, which is really pretty unique when you think about it. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that we were the ones to be able to bring that forward. The technology itself is quite simple. In fact, our distributor down in New Mexico, he always loves to talk about it, and his comment is, he said, for years I was looking for a system that was mechanically simple and biologically complex. And that's really the way that, as when we invented this technology, we were looking at that whole thing. How do we take all that's known about wastewater treatment? How do we take the use of air, the use of mixing, the use of electricity, the use of the different mechanical things that you do in wastewater treatment, and condense it down into literally the tiniest possible functional unit that we can come up with? And that's really how the Piranha, and this particular unit now is, we're going towards a more powerful unit that we had developed, which is now going to be the Sludge Hammer. So it's a branding issue. We're coming out with really a new product called the Sludge Hammer, and that's what we put in the firehouse. When we did it, we were looking at a lot of different aspects of your community's problems. You have this, the work towards, moving towards the sewer system. We were proud to actually be part of that. We responded to your RFP, and we were actually one of the companies that was interviewed for it. Now, in that particular application, we would have taken this only as a very small component of a much broader centralized system. But in actual fact, we always intended with this particular technology to be able to address all different things. My feeling about wastewater treatment is that it's a system. It's not simply collection, treatment, disposal. And what you should do is you should make sure that every aspect of that, collection, treatment, disposal, no matter how you configure it, no matter how you have it put together, has to really be part of an overall functional system where everything interacts. Because you gain benefits almost anywhere in that system that go back towards earlier parts. They work together and they should be linked. And the engineering community has really not looked at that very closely. They've always considered the collection system as something separate. I've always felt the collection system is your first opportunity to begin your treatment, and that's where that treatment should always start. It should start literally the minute it leaves the toilet. And so when we were looking at this, we were saying we know there were issues with the regional board. We knew there was controversy in the community, and we were saying no matter which direction you go, we can contribute something literally today. And we can do these literally in a couple hours. I mean, I'm not a construction laborer. I've got a PhD, and I laugh. You know, most of the time, most of my money was made being a carpenter. Right now, they will have a function until you finally have some alternative solution. And to keep them protected is very, very crucial. And we were looking also at a lot of the other aspects of it, the ability to begin the digestion of the solids materials right there at the home. Again, not only does that address the issue with the regional board requesting pumping of septic tanks as an interim solution, well, we can pump that septic tank biologically at the same time and achieve that same result. And at some point in the future when you have a collection system or where you have a single unified system, then you already have a very important tool to keep working in that mode, no matter what you end up putting in place. And so that was really our intent in trying to demonstrate it here in the firehouse. Technically, the unit is, as I say, it's just a very, very simple unit. That device now is sitting in the bottom of the septic tank at the firehouse. It's mixing. It's got a little air pump that's delivering about 3 cubic feet per minute of air. It goes into the bottom.
The air goes right through this little tube. And you can see it's very simple inside. There's a matrix. That particular material right there at the bottom of it is the matrix that's also inside.
Mr. Rickham, excuse me, could you just repeat yourself to the mic for the
Okay. The unit, it has, the air goes into the unit. At the base of the unit is a microfine bubble diffuser. And it's generating extremely fine bubbles, and it's causing the air to rise, and it draws liquid through that column, and it pumps about 30,000 gallons per day through that unit. It's being driven by an air pump that draws, in this particular model, because it's for the firehouse, which is larger than a standard home, the typical home unit would draw about 40 watts, so it's really not much more than your refrigerator light bulb. We've had clients who've asked us, what will this do to our electric bill? Most of them don't see it at all in their electric charge because it's really very, very modest. 40 watts is a very small energy. But what we're able to do with that is to actually circulate 30,000 gallons per day through this unit, exposed bacteria that we add to this unit. Okay. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can see in the inside, that matrix inside is where the bacteria colonize that. So we're passing the contents of the septic tank over a large bacterial colony of 120 square feet 30 times a day, literally, in a septic tank. So it means those bacteria have access to all the food in that tank, which is really what the waste is. They digest it, they convert it to carbon dioxide, and the bulk of what happens is your biological content left over after the end of the day really is very, very little. It's a little bit of residual will go out into the septic tank or into the leach field. And what we're sending to the leach field are the bacteria that we're specifically growing for that purpose. Now, one of the things we're really looking at for Los Osos here is that we have shown in other studies throughout the country that the microbiology changes to the point where the nitrogen dynamics, we don't create nitrate with this unit. Even though we're adding air, it never gets converted to nitrate. When it gets into the soil, and what we've shown at several different places, which will be in your technology package that we presented, and despite their reluctance to allow us to go forward with this, the regional board finally did. They, after the fact, when they finally admitted, well, okay, you're going to put it in. Gee, we'd really love to hear it. We'd really love to see what happens. So, I feel pretty confident that we'll be able to stay and work very productively with the regional board. Other than that, it's really it's a pretty simple system. We were looking at ways. One of the things we feel that would be important in this area is that you can reclaim water. Again, you could reclaim water even if it was part of a centralized system, right, at the household. That way, then, what you're doing is you're lessening the load on a sewer collection system. Most of the installations we do in places like New Mexico or Michigan or a lot of the East Coast places are now strictly done with subsurface drip irrigation. So we go straight from the house into the septic tank, clean it. It goes out right up in the upper soil profile to irrigate lawns or vegetation. So those are the types of things that we really want to move forward with this technology, and we're delighted to be here doing it for you. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Any questions, Vice President Fouché? We'll have public comment after. We'll have
a... Dan, can you explain your monitoring program for this as far as lyseminars and how often or how deep those are in the soil and how often you will pull samples and monitor results?
I'm going to have to come back down and do location because we're going into the leach field right there. And part of it, there's no real as-built drawings or anything like that. So I'm going to go in and probe that area so I can identify the actual leach beds or where the leach fields are. And once I can do that, then I can locate. I'll probably be going about a foot to a foot and a half off the sidewall. And using a vacuum lysimeter, again, part of the probing will be to determine the depth of the actual rock in that. And what I would do is come down about 6 inches to a foot below the actual bottom of the leach line and go about a foot and a half over. So I'm catching water relatively close to the source of where it's being released. And that way, if I see dramatic reductions in that particular distance, I know that any distance past that I've gotten, I will have more. But at least I can be conservative in my estimate of what the reductions are. Because typically when I've done these analyses up in Sonoma County where we've done a lot of this work, it's been within 6 inches to a foot is when you see your major reduction in nitrogen. So it's relatively close to the release point. Yeah. And timing, I would probably start it in about a month after it's been in there. I'll draw samples as soon as I get my initial one in so I can get some early data. Okay. And then I'll watch it track down.
Would it only be nitrates that you'll be monitoring? Or?
No. I would typically we'd look for... in Michigan, what they studied was what they call total inorganic nitrogen,
okay,
which is ammonia, nitrite, nitrate. Mm-hmm. Now, we can also sample for total Kaldol nitrogen, which gives you a little bit of an index of what your organic nitrogen is as well.
Okay.
So we would probably incorporate TKN as well.
Okay. And as far as sludge production, does this lower that production, or is it the same?
Sludge, even?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What we have seen, I've done quite a bit of studies. We worked with the city of Santa Rosa up at their wastewater plant there where we were treating full strength point in time. And that's what I would like to do here especially is maybe take 3-month intervals, look at it, come in, do a full mix, make sure I've captured or at least mixed all the solids in the tank. Then I can do a TSS on that. I can back calculate to what my actual volume is in the tank. And then I have a pretty good idea of what this typical load to that system would be, and then I can calculate my distances there. But I would expect, most of the systems we see, we have not yet pumped any of the systems we've put in. It's been 5 years now we've been doing it.
Okay.
And we've got about 2,000 of these in place throughout the United States.
Are they sizes? You have different sizes according to the volume coming
in? Yeah, what we do is we did a community back in Michigan that was 150 homes. That was done in, we had 5,000 gallon tanks and 10,000 gallon tanks, and we had, there were 10 different actual systems with 10 different leach where they were subsurface drip fields. We've done mobile home park we just came from yesterday over in Tahama Village over in Stockton. We installed these in an existing package plant that had been there for 30 years and had totally failed leach pits. We recovered those about 3 or 4 years ago, and we've been going back and forth. And when we were there the other day, it's water coming out is about BOD of 10. And I mean, it's looking at tertiary level coming at. And I fight the owner of the park a lot on this. He won't pump it anymore. And I say, you do have to deal with solids at some point here. And he keeps saying, yeah, but it's working. And I said, yeah, but someday you're going to drive me nuts.
Well, then a follow-up would be operation and maintenance after you install it.
Yeah, operation and maintenance. Typically what we do is we have an annual inspection. And that involves coming in, pulling the bacterial packet out, changing the bacteria, and renewing that. Because, this is an aerobic bacterial generator. That's the ABG portion of it. Okay. And what we want to do is use it to control the microbiology in that tank. Now, my background, I have an academic background. I have a PhD in ecology from UC Berkeley, and I was a marine biologist for many years, but I owned a winery for about 15 years. And so my background is in industrial-scale microbiology in the wine industry. Mm-hmm. And when I started looking at all of the industries in the world that depend on microbiology, whether it be winemaking, baking, brewing, enzyme production, pharmaceuticals,
Every single one of those industries had absolute control over the microbiology in their systems, and they did it by inoculation with the desired organisms. The wastewater industry, which is the largest of all, absolutely never does that. It's the only industry based on microbiology that uses whatever the cat drags in, or whatever gets flushed down the toilet, or whatever happens to come in through the airstream of an aerator. And I've never understood that. I mean, Louis Pasteur discovered bacteria in 1850, you know, and the wine industry adopted it within 10 years. Every winery in the world had total control over the microbiology. Wastewater engineering just has been very, very behind the curve on this one. So that's what this really is all about, microbiology.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's very interesting stuff. Thanks.
Just to follow the tail on that question, that was all of the maintenance?
Well, actually, what we do, the maintenance is the only moving part is the pump. So, and the pump sits in a little basin over by the house somewhere. Check the air pump, make sure that the pump is working. If it looks like it might be time to change it, we simply swap out the air pump. And then, and so you just then you can take it back to the shop and change your diaphragm if you need to. Part of it would really what the maintenance is an inspection of the system. And I feel very strongly that, and the time is coming with AB 885 at the state level, all over this state, people are going to be having mandatory inspections of their septic systems. And I think it's a long time overdue. People on septic have really gotten a free ride when you compare what people on sewers have had to do. They pay a trained staff to take care of their waste, and they have done that for ever since they live in a home on sewer. Septic people have not. They've tended to just flush and forget. And it's time to change that. It really is.
Yeah. Director Decker.
I have a question for Mr. Blesky.
Okay.
Can we talk about the money part of this again? I know your services were donated today and some of the services from Al Septic and George, but what's the district's commitment to this unit and this company?
Well, I think it's a heck of a deal. In 1 year, we have to make a decision, and that is do we spend the money? I think it's $4,600 or so. To leave the unit in place. Yeah. And if it doesn't function, Mr. Wickham has just said he's so confident he'll pull it out if it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. If it does work, I just hope I'm still around to sign the check for him.
For a typical homeowner, now prices vary a little bit based on individual homes and individual conditions. We average, I would guess, somewhere around $4,500 for a final total installation. It's, you know, it'll range anywhere maybe $4,000 to $5,000 depending upon how much work you have to do around the house. But typically the installations are very inexpensive. They take anywhere from 5 to 6 hours, you know, for a crew to come in and do it. They walk away, and really you'd never know they were there. I mean, there's almost no landscape impact on an installation with this.
Let me just ask, today, then, the fire station was pumped?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, and then that gave you the room to put this in?
Well, it's funny. When we started out, we were looking at this stuff. We were pushing the envelope because we really wanted to know about the technology's capability. And we started out almost never pumping septic tanks. We would put them into tanks that had a foot of sludge in the bottom, foot of scum on the top. They'd work beautifully. They would recover totally failed leach fields, even though we knew we were sending solids out. And we were bringing them back in. Over time, I found that they worked better, however, if we did pump beforehand. And just really just to be more responsible and have more consistency, I had more predictability about the recovery of leach fields that we were working with. So our recommendation almost always is pump the tank first. We'll put it in. We'll be starting with clean material. It's simply beneficial no matter what. And in actual fact, from the perspective of Los Osos and some of the the regional board's issues about pumping, and, well, really, it's that first pumping that counts. Now, if they were recommending people here pump every other month, well, they're taking everything out that first pumping. And then the next two, and over time, it simply starts to back up and it slows down. And if septic failure is a funny thing, as long as the ground is taking the water, it's not really failed. The minute a gallon of it reaches the surface. You might put 500 into it, 499 go into the soil, and suddenly only a gallon comes out at the top. Well, that's a failed system. Well, we can recover those relatively quickly because all you're really trying to do is get it back underground where it's safe, and then the ground is doing the treatment. So typically we go in to failed systems, and it might take anywhere from maybe a month to 3 months to get them to where they're actually then working where they should be, or at least where they're safe. It might take, in certain systems, like your soil's beautiful here. In Sonoma County, I go into systems that have soil that you could make pots out of. You know, it's like potting clay. And those systems there, well, you know, it's a little harder. Those might take a year to get to the point where they're really acting like a more or less new system where you don't see a high level in the tank. But they're still functioning because they're still all going into the soil and they're still performing what they're supposed to do. So, I mean, it's really, it's a bit of a complex phenomenon because each one is different. But they recover quickly.
And so you said it's the mucus that clogs the fields. I thought it was salts.
No, rarely. I mean, it's blamed on salts a lot of time, but salt really almost has nothing to do with it.
Really?
It's primarily a biological issue.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did is this particular group of bacteria that we're using, these Bacillus species that we've incorporated in this, are the primary bacteria that live in the forest leaf litter zone. So literally their job is to eat the billions of tons of dead leaves that fall every year. Well, leaves are particularly difficult food. It's a lot of cellulose and lignin, and it's not easy food to eat. Well, these bacteria have all the enzymes that are necessary to break down cellulose. And cellulose is also a sugar molecule. The mucus is also a sugar molecule. It's a mucopolysaccharide. So these bacteria literally ferment the sugar in the mucus. That's what they do. And that's why they can go out into the leach field, they can break down that mucus layer and open the soil again. And that's really how they function.
That's interesting. Another question on the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Do the bacteria do anything with pathogens or this endocrine disruptors that we keep reading about and hearing about now? What happens?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I first got involved using these bacteria about 15 years ago when we were doing cleanup of contaminated soil. I did a lot of jobs with Pemex down in Mexico and, you know, in Tabasco and Veracruz and those places. We did a lot of work with the U.S. Navy at the Okinawa Naval Supply Depot, Camp Pendleton, and various things like that. And we were working with some of the most toxic environments you can imagine, breaking down literally everything in that soil. Now, I really don't know if they're doing the same thing in these septic tanks, but I do know when I was using these same bacteria for breakdown of some extremely recalcitrant compounds, dichloroethane, we were breaking down PCBs, there were a lot of different things. My suspicion is that they're probably doing quite a bit of that work in these septic systems as well. Now, we do get, and one of the things we'll be sampling for, are fecal coliforms in these tanks. We've seen in our data, and it's in your data package, typically about a 2-log reduction. So a septic tank normally would have about 1 million colony-forming units per 100 milliliters. The tank itself, by the time we have these operating, they usually...
Are those approved systems in California? Are any of those systems doing that in California, or do you know?
No, California is an odd place. Now, there are a few systems in place now that have been using... if we go work with large installations where you're above 1,500 gallons per day, you're usually out of the purview of local environmental health. Local environmental health usually mandates NSF 40 certification for the system. We're currently going through NSF 40 testing, and we expect to have it probably some later part of this year, I would hope somewhere before December or so. We'll have our NSF 40 status, which then would make it pretty much acceptable to go in, put the piranha in, get credit as an advanced treatment unit, and then go to drip irrigation. But if we go into larger systems, if they're engineered, then that's really not an issue because an engineer's stamp is really the approval. And so from that standpoint, yeah, most of the systems we do with those are larger engineered systems, you know, above 1,500 gallons per day.
And what is NSF 40?
NSF 40 is a certification by the National Sanitation Foundation. And it's the standard that's used for on-site systems in order to get advanced treatment status. And typically, it's where you have a home that would not, or a piece of property that wouldn't work with a conventional system. But if a regulator looks at it and he says, you know, I'm taking a risk by allowing you to build a home here because I know the soil in this home will never work for a septic system, I have to trust the fact that this advanced treatment system we're allowing you to develop this property with will really perform. And so that's what the NSF 40 standard does. But we had never done it because we had a separate standard. This was a UPC listed. It's through IAPMO. It's listed with the UPC Uniform Plumbing Code as an appliance to recover failed leach fields. Mm-hmm. So that's our certification through a different standards organization.
And this is just baffling to me. You mentioned that the sludge is just gone. And how does it? And where does it go? You did say, but I just wanted you to repeat it.
Here's the think for a second. And I'll put this in a biological framework for you. You as an individual in the course of your life will eat probably 10,000 pounds of food. Now, some of that you'll excrete, and it'll go into the septic tank. But most of it is breathed out as carbon dioxide. Yeah. I mean, I know I've eaten at least 10,000 pounds of food, and I don't weigh 10,000 pounds. So the fact of the matter is, all you're doing is converting organic carbon to carbon dioxide. And sludge buildup in any wastewater system is simply a sign of inefficiency of digestion. The more efficient the digestion, the less sludge. It's that simple. And so if you really work with what I always consider is the software of the system, I compare this to a laptop. When I was in college, I remember when I first started college, the computer at the University of Miami was in a 6-story building, all mechanical, and it could barely add and subtract. Now, all of a sudden, a laptop has infinite power, and it's all because of the software. A mechanical wastewater treatment plant is like an old-style mechanical computer. You need a big one to make it work. Well,
a little experience there.
I do it every day. I mean, I just came back from Washington, and what we did in Washington is we hired a lobbyist. And so I went around with this lobbyist, and we met with the head of the Environmental Health Department. When we got to Washington, the first thing they did is they said, well, we'll run you through our additive approval program. So we have our bacteria, our Piranha Blend bacteria. We run it through the additive approval program, and it took about 2 weeks. And we go, wow, this is nice. I'll be darned, a really forward-looking state. Then we said, well, how about actually putting in the unit where we can grow these bacteria? Oh, no, you couldn't do that. My goodness, we have no idea what would happen, my God. You know, so we couldn't put the piranha in, even though we could sell our bacteria. And I've been fighting these guys, you know, for a long time. I have the person who manufactures these for us, Elgin Corporation out of Connecticut, which makes this cuspated plastic, does a lot of different septic products that are very, very good products. They're sold all over the country. Well, he finally sued the state of Washington, and didn't help him. You know, because ultimately it still comes down to some guy sitting in a county somewhere saying, oh, no, I just don't want him. To heck with you. You know, and you just, a businessman cannot fight forever. So, you know, we have the same problems you guys do with it. You know.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, there may be some a short time frame that those could function very well here.
And renting was one of our thoughts. We said, you know, if we went in and leased them and performed a function on the assumption they would be pulled out, mm-hmm. then what can a regulator really say? Well, turns out they say, no, we still don't want you to do it.
Okay.
But it is feasible. We can still do it. I mean, we're approved in the state of California. We have an IAPMO listing. And I go back and forth with these guys. I say, listen, you're a Uniform Plumbing Code county. You literally cannot stop us. And if you can't find some little niche to put us in, that's your fault. And that's not our problem. And we're going to put them in. And I had to face down the prosecutor in Sonoma County to do that. And, you know, you get frustrated by it. But sometimes you just have to because it's important that people start cleaning their environment. And, you know, that's just the way I work. I get in trouble sometimes, but I know that we do it carefully. We monitor it. We prove what we have. And that's how we feel we're going to go about doing it. And I'm not going to be cowed by somebody who's just going to, you know, prevent progress.
Thank you.
What is the resistance? When you, what is the regulator resistance? What do you see in other states or here? What is the resistance to?
Interestingly enough, it's one of the weirdest things is that it's all over the map. I go into New Mexico, and we request approval for advanced treatment. And they said, well, you know, your data doesn't really support advanced treatment at this point. But if you want to put them in existing systems, oh, go ahead. And so automatically it's approved. We go into the state of New York. The state of New York says, well, what we'll do is we'll issue you a letter of non-objection. We have no objection whatsoever if you put them in existing systems. Now, if we put them in a new system to get extra credit as advanced treatment, they say, no, that's a different issue. We have to address that with a different way. Right now, we're talking to them about it.
Yeah.
I mean, comment was, we had a meeting scheduled, and then we get a comment back saying, well, don't waste your time. I'm not going to approve it anyhow, so go away. Well, I talked to somebody at the county a little bit higher, and, I think that'll change.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's an electric box.
Yeah,
it's what it is.
It's really it's
bacteria.
As when we got the permits in Sonoma County, the person who actually did it for us is one of our associates, and he was a building inspector for a long time. He really understood code issues, and he sat there and he said, "Listen, it's a listed appliance. It's a Uniform Plumbing Code listed appliance. It has to go in," and he just kept persisting. Every comment he got back, he just said, yes, I agree with you, but it's a listed appliance. And he just kept dwelling on this. And how can you keep out a Uniform Plumbing Code listed appliance out of a plumbing fixture? You know?
I don't know.
So.
Okay, Mr. Blesky, did you have something you wanted to add?
It's been an interesting day, Dan, and just kind of stay there a little bit. Couple of observations up there. We had a great discussion on grease reduction that I think the city of Bakersfield will be interested in someday. Thank you for that.
Oh.
The other thing is that when it was mentioned that the drip irrigation system, I want to thank the firefighters for immediately wanting to beautify their horseshoe pit. I mean, there's plans already. I don't want to get everybody's hopes up. The data will be what it is.
Exactly.
But just to kind of take you back to how this thing happened, I had a number of months ago when we first talked, mm-hmm. I had a call from Al Barrow, who was bugging me. And it was an interesting kind of bugging, and he had pointed out, you need to look at this letter that went out a couple years ago. And so I didn't think much of it because I had other things that Al was bugging me about and I was trying to get done. But it registered, and then there was a prominent person in our community who called up just about the same time that Al did. And I thought, you know what? This is real interesting. So I did look at that letter, and I found out that there was promise, and it was just a series of events that happened within probably in 24 hours, and I gave you a call. But they all came together on the same day. It was a nice rainy day when that discussion occurred in the parking lot with one of our citizens. So that was interesting. And after speaking with you today out on the site, there was a couple of things, other things that dawned on me. First of all, you have the same presence that Dr. Alexander does. I had lunch with him one time, and there was a couple of things that really came to my mind. You know, you guys both think out of the box. You make me excited about microbiology, and I've never been excited about microbiology. You're both Navy men.
Hey.
Your story about decks of ships at sunset, I've never experienced that. But I do identify with Dr. Alexander's CB experiences, different places in the world, but his was out in the South Pacific doing similar things. But it's got a lot of important people's interest, and even some of those that of us that we fought together, against each other and for. If it comes out, I think there's a lot to be gained for everyone.
Great. Well, I certainly appreciate having been here to do it.
We thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments from the board at this time? Okay. Thank you. Can you hang out for a little bit? The way we have it scheduled is public comment is going to be for consent calendar and your presentation at the same time.
Oh, yeah, I'd be happy to.
So we'll go through a few more items and and then...
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, Madam President, one thing. One thing is that the project took four times as long because the contractor was so engaging in conversation, as you can see.
It's teaching. You were teaching everybody, I'm sure. Director Sassania?
I just want to make sure that the public knows and then that I have it straight, too. This isn't going to resolve our ACL issue with the regional board at the three CSD sites. It's something we're doing because it's going to clean up whatever discharge is there. It's the right thing to do. And we're hoping to get some buy-in to this. But it's not... It's something we're doing on our own.
This is correct because we are... We're kind of looking at what the objective is of the basin plan. But we also are not ignoring... this is why I don't want anybody to think that this is a permanent fix. There's a long way to go. If it works, there's still a long way to go because of the prohibition. And that's something that I think we need to engage. But we can't engage the regional board unless we have the data to share with them. They've reminded us of our requirements, but they haven't shut us down. So we're hopeful. The data will tell.
Right. That's right. You have to have something to argue with.
The other one, too, Director Sassana, is one thing that I really want to encourage people is right now, wait till what we see is happening. Don't go out and just put stuff in the ground right now. This is part of what our plan to help for the CDOs is as well. But we don't have the data to be able to comfortably tell you, yeah, go do it. And then, again, there's some areas of the community where it may not work, and we're still developing those scenarios. Quite frankly, in one of our meetings, as you recall, with regional staff, they did structure the CDOs to allow us to allow individual systems these types of opportunities. So they're not putting up permanent roadblocks, but they're going to want to see data. So just bear with us and stay tuned.
Great. Thank you. Anybody? Okay. What we're doing next is oral administrative reports and then reports from CDF and utilities only. So do you have an oral administrative report? Anything else you'd like to say at this time?
Let me just get back to my agenda because that was just exciting. And that now you know what engineers get all worked up about in their spare time. The annual audit on item A, Madam President, we will have our auditor back on Wednesday, mid-year budget. We have to do this anyway before we can get ourselves squared away to get our coming budget done. However, those can be parallel activities. So we got to kind of get things to make sense, get it in front of finance, and then move on. Item C is a typo. That actually is going to be discussed. I have submitted my written comments to you, and we'll get to that when we get to the written reports. And with those two oral reports, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Let's go on to Chief Fanaris' report for CDF.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the board, members of the public, and on TV there. Quick summary of my written report for the month of February. We responded to 82 calls in February. 9 of those were simultaneous or back-to-back calls. Of those 9, one of them was required the paramedics to provide advanced life support. Of the 82 incidents, 55 were medical aids. 26 of those 55 required advanced life support as well, so about 50%. Of the 82 calls, 9 of them reported as fires, and the rest were miscellaneous calls, public service assists, and such. We conducted a number of training evolutions in the month of February, including one that got a little bit of press in the Bay News, if you saw that. We had a building in 2nd Street in Santa Maria that was donated to the fire department for training. Morro Bay Fire Department, several CDF County fire stations participated in a number of drills down there, and I believe we're still down there this last weekend cutting holes in the roof and practicing. So we got a lot of good training out of that building. Conducted a number of fire prevention or outreach programs, including one for a preschool. We drove the fire engine out at the Celebrate Morro Bay parade, and guys had a lot of fun down there. We, at the time of this writing, we're still preparing for the CERT class. As we reported last month, that was a very successful class. We're still looking at ways and evaluating how to set up CERT teams in the Los Osos area. If people are interested, it's not too late. They can call the fire station at 528-1053. We'd be happy to give them some phone numbers to call and how they can work with their community. A number of other community outreach there in items 6 and 7. Number 8 deals with the FEMA Assistance to Firefighters grant. So a couple things went on with that. We continue to work with the Trench Rescue grant, which is current this year, which we are accepting, which we are purchasing equipment on. And I have a quick demonstration. It's not as exciting as the Piranha, but I'll show you that here in a second. And then we started the process to close out last year's SCBA grant. So what I have here is a... I'll talk here for a second. This is a thermal imaging camera. There's probably 4 or 5 other ones in the county right now. San Luis City has one. Morro Bay, I believe Cayucas and Cambria are the other 4. Through the smoke and see where the heat of the fire is, put the fire out in order to protect the victims that are in there, or you can look around there and see if you have, you know, victims in the smoke room with no fire to be able to remove them quickly. Additionally, this can be used in areas like the Back Bay where we have a kayaker at night, a vehicle TC where there's people are thrown out from the vehicle. We can do a quick little search to make sure we're not missing anybody. So a lot of good uses with this. So I'll pass this up here. That, again, was purchased on the grant. It's we provided 5% of that, and it runs right around about $9,000. It's expensive now, but when we first started looking at them about 5-6 years ago, they were running about $25,000. The last item that I want to talk about... The last thing I want to talk about is the upcoming hazard abatement deadline, and I want to echo what Sam Boykin had said earlier on. He's got a very good program. I strongly support that program. I like to see that go and be very, very successful, because the more stuff that we can get chipped and hauled off with Sam's program, the less we'll have during hazard abatement time. We sent out some notices in the water bill here in the month of February. We've done a couple of different shows on that. There's some flyers out on your table over there for the general public. We're still looking at a June 1st deadline. There you go. There you go. All of them, all 5 of them. That's the 5 there. All right. So back to the hazard abatement program. Again, we look at June 1st deadline. That's in accordance with the CSD fire code. We will be doing our inspections starting in late May. We hope to get everyone inspected in late May. Hopefully we'll get 100% compliance. If not, we'll do a second inspection in early June. We realize with the late rains it may have to be done later than we would normally like, and we anticipate possibly having some time delays with that, but we're still on track for a June 1st deadline. And so, again, we strongly support Sam Boykin's program. The last thing I'd like to do is press the Station 15 open house. The open house is on April 22nd. It's the same day as Sam Boykin's chipping day, so as you stop by one, I encourage you to go by the other. We look to have it in the Vaughn's Shopping Center. They'll have a fire safety house, numerous fire engines. We will be cutting up a old car down there, doing some auto extrication demos. There'll be some confined space and RIC training or rapid intervention training skills shown. So it'll be good for the kids as well as having some stuff for the adults. I can answer any questions if you'd like.
That was a great report. Thank you. Any questions? The only thing I'd like to add, and you were there too, Chief, would you like to talk about Dan Turner's retirement?
Absolutely. Chief Turner was officially retired, was last weekend.
Good evening, President Schicker, board, staff, and members of the community. Utilities. Well, we've been moving along. I'll just try to make this brief. One of the things I do want to acknowledge is Mike Gutormson. He was one of our operators. He actually has been with us for about 5 years, and the last two was a supervisor, resigned. He moved on. He's got some great opportunities for him in the county, and we certainly want to wish him well. We are actively recruiting for this position at this time, and he's going to be some hard shoes to fill, but you know, we're hopeful we're going to get a good man for that position. 16th Street Tank, we are done at this point. Today we finalized some of the last detail work. These were epoxying the cathodic protection that we now have in all three of our tanks. This will mitigate or help prevent any corroding from the inside of those tanks. So the cathodic protection is installed, and we'll be releasing the final payment retainage on that project. So 16th Street, it's been a long process, but our tank is back. It's online, so we've got all the storage up and back in service. The I-Bank, or the capital improvement projects, are moving forward. Contract 6, which is the substandard service lines, that's moving very well. I'm very pleased with how that's coming out. We are over 250 now service lines replaced. We will be moving into the replacement now of steel lines, which are a lot more difficult, take a lot more time, but we are moving in the right direction there. Contract 9, this is the hydropneumatic zone expansion. There's an upgrade to our South Bay well, and our booster pump stations being totally overhauled. What this is going to do is increase pressures throughout town, and as well as flows. We have received a 50% design. We're expecting the 90% at the end of this month with 100% completion by May. We're anticipating going out for RFP for construction of these projects in August of this coming year. That Contract 9, Contract 10, and Contract 11, again, they all have been moving forward in the design kind of on parallel tracks. And again, they have to do with booster pump stations, increasing the water mains, a lot of upgrades throughout town, and this is going to benefit the whole community, well, at least for the Baywood section, with regards to adequate fire flows being one of the most important points that we'll be hitting on this. Contract 12, this is a supplemental water supply wells. We presented this project last month. It's moving forward. We've begun sampling of all the wells to start looking at the water quality as well as sounding levels and other characteristics of those existing wells. And the samples are being submitted to laboratories. We should have some data for the community. And it's the project will give us a means of hooking that line transmission line back up and providing water in the event of a large earthquake, should that water main line go down. Okay. The other project has to do with our 8th Street filtrate discharge. We have completed now a technical memo, thanks to Mr. Miller, that describes a project that we've been talking about for well over about a year to eliminate that discharge from the drainage basin across the street. Just a quick overview, that discharge line was put in back in the 80s when the county put in the filter plant. to deal with iron and manganese at the 8th Street well. And at that time, it seemed like a fairly straight, easy way to solve the backwash of those filters, just put it to the drainage basin. Of course, times have changed. It's not the 80s anymore. It has become an issue, so we are moving forward with this. What we're looking to do is land apply the water and use it in a combination of dust control for our water yard as well as landscape. So that is moving forward. We're looking, I believe the regional board right now is reviewing our plan. Once we get the go-ahead, we're going to kick that in. We should have it designed by August and in the end have it constructed and have that discharge removed by December of this year. Going on to wastewater, we are continuing to monitor and operate the Bay Ridge and Vista systems. There's no new news up there other than we are in compliance with the regional board and we continue to submit the required reports. Drainage operations has been going good, too. We've had a lot of rain, as everyone knows. They've come late this year, but we've had no incident of flooding. The pumps have been operating quite efficiently, and we're glad to see that we haven't had any problems with those systems at this point. That concludes my report. I'm glad to answer any questions the board may have.
Thank you. Any questions from anybody? Vice President Fouché.
George, for the engineering that's being done, is it 10? Excuse me. I'm missing a page. Where'd it go? But anyway, the booster pump stations, that's being engineered. Does Rob, does your office review those plans when they're submitted? Does that go through a review process before final 100%?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
And then, George, I guess the one date I was kind of looking for is just the end of construction, when you think those things are going to be up and running.
I'm sorry, John.
When the end of construction, when those actually will come online and run. The booster pumps and the pressure system will be increased.
Right.
We had that technical memo to read, the one you sent to Water Board, and I just lost it in my paper. Is it here?
Oh, yeah, I believe I prepared a packet and distributed to all the board.
Okay. Looks like I just got it tonight, so maybe if I have questions, I'll...
Sure.
Okay. And then the other question is about the water rate study. Did you want to talk about that, or is it a committee thing? Is that in committee? With Tuck Field, I noticed that was passed by when you were discussing.
Right. We talked about and discussed that at Water Ops last night. And basically, it has to do with updating our 2003 water rate study. We have a proposal from Mr. Tuck Field who presented and prepared the last one. The proposal is for about $11,000, well within our budget. And what it would look at is where we sit today with regards to our water rate. And again, it's an update of the 2003 water rate.
And that's still being discussed in committee. There's nothing to report any further detail on it right now. Because I know we talked about it at one meeting that we were looking possibly at somebody else instead of Tuck Field.
That's correct, and discussed it again last night. I believe it's going to come back to committee.
It's agendized for the next meeting.
Okay, agendized for... Okay, thank you. That's all I have. Anybody else? Okay, next report. Thank you very much. Mr. Blasky.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board. I'm just going to briefly go through some of the key events over the last 30 or so days. As you can see, one of the first things that we heard last week was the awarding of our project report update to Dana Ripley's company, Ripley Pacific, and on Monday, Rob Miller and Dana got together. It was Tuesday, and they did the kickoff meeting.
and Ripley Pacific has been on site with their startup. We were looking at awarding, we have received from in-situ engineering down to the septic management program, and this kind of flows into the items on page 2 in your board package. And in-situ, I believe we're looking at doing that next week to further review that scope and consider that award. But essentially what we're looking at with in-situ is to get the septic management program kicked off, develop the policies, move forward. It's explained in the package and also in the RFP. Simultaneous with that is another scope item. We also have in-situ looking at our last two ACL sites, that being Vista de Oro and Bay Ridge Estates. And he will be assisting us in evaluating technologies and plans to implement interim remediation to those systems. Assessment district and bond-related activities, we have confirmed that we have the ability to sell up to $2.4 million worth of bonds. However, that is what I'd like to leave you with this evening, is that we still have that bonding that was raised regarding what should be included in the affordability study, and we'll take that back to committee where we'll discuss it prior to taking it out. I don't believe if we're able to resolve it in committee, you have given it your blessing to go ahead and put the RFP out. So if we're successful in committee of getting that out, you will see the next time would be a recommendation for award. The wastewater construction claims, I'm going to bring, there's a lot of activity going on that, and we've had a couple of significant items that have come through. First of all, you know that the Bernard and Monterey Mechanical were successful on the 29th of last month with freezing our SRF funds, that being the SRF trust amount, and I believe that's roughly around $1.3 to $1.38 million. And also the $660,000 in our wastewater checking account. That's where we believe that the SRF funding was deposited and what remains of it. With that in mind, we are looking, with that event having occurred, we are looking to, we have an audit coming, but that the judge ordered, and unfortunately, it was the judge ordered that at tax time. So we are going to be coming to you next week with a recommendation to borrow from those limited funds that we can borrow from those accounts. Right now we're mapping our cash accounts into our reserve accounts to make sure that we have all of that correlation. Currently, that does not correlate. We got to basically track that back. And that's what our accountant has determined and what the auditor, what our current auditor has revealed, and we'll get that squared away. That in mind, too, on another admin is I do have a temporary ASM that I will be bringing, that I can hire, but we're looking at, we had considered bringing a Wilden employee in, and we did have one in mind. However, that employee is available. We could have hired that person through Wildan, but with our markup, we think that would be it would have been too expensive for the district. So we're looking at recommending us hiring this temporary ASM as a direct employee to save on any markups and to bring that person in. It's a retired Kathleen Cronin is the person that we're looking at, and she brings a wealth of investment banking and banking regulatory experience. Has very strong background in controls, and she also was chief financial officer for a construction company that dealt with public agency contracts. And I believe that it's a good fit for this interim period as we go through this adjustment, and believe we'll be able to use our existing staff to fill in the gaps when it comes to certain of the spending restrictions and to bring that person up. The other thing that we're looking at is, with the temporary, is to have that person evaluate any future hires that may be required here in the near future. One thing, too, is that we did get a couple of things. Montgomery Watson Harza has requested a meeting with the CSD to sit down and discuss the numerous claims that we have. I think we haven't gotten the commitment that we would like, but then again, I don't think they've gotten the data that they would like. But we're talking, and I think they're listening to what we have to say. We have a lot of work to do, and they want to see some results, and hopefully they will see that in the near future. It was a good meeting. It was a great exchange. And the one last thing I want to go over is that in your board package, you will see that we have the remainder of the claims on 17th Street. Most of the initial claims are all, I believe, have been rectified, but just about a month ago, we received one or two additional ones that people submitted months after the event. Those have been submitted to the insurance company. The insurance company's handling with staff's assistance. And with that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions at this time? Vice President Fouché.
The street repairs being close to being completed, there's construction area signs out there that hopefully we can take those down after that's done. There's one at LOVR and Bay South Street. That's a construction area sign. Has a phone number for the wastewater project.
Yeah, I noticed those two. Those were the original signs, I think, that were put up by the district when the project started. So I think those can come down.
Yeah, salvage those so we can save them.
Maybe utility crew could.
Yeah. And Dan, I was kind of reading some stuff when you mentioned that it was Barnard and Montgomery Watson donated money to Save the Dream. Is that what I heard?
Yes. We also have, I have knowledge right now that certain others in the media are considering requesting all the Form 700s that Barnard and Montgomery Watson Harza has distributed throughout the state.
And how much was that?
I believe that Barnard, I know, was $10,000, but I'm not sure what the Montgomery Watson was
$10,000 each.
$10,000
to Save the Dream.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Blesky, when you that is incredible. And did you say that media is going to look into it a little further, into where else they donated money?
Yeah, I found out that there's some reporters out there. They kind of just asked to just kind of not be named, but that they are kind of looking at it. They may be, is how they left it with me.
That's interesting. And I haven't had a chance to read your detailed report on these items, so could you include this report in next week's written report, too?
I will do that.
So in case I have more questions then, because I'd like to take a better look at it.
There's also a couple of status I need to get from Cleith & Associates on their progress and to confirm that it actually might be in the utility report, but we'll get that clarified.
And then if you could add just a quick summary in this report of your meeting with the regional board, what you discussed. Add that to your report for next week, too. That would be helpful. I can't think of anything else because the Piranha folks did a nice job on their presentation.
Tonight, some of those are on the table for the public to keep track of. I think that one is we received one late yesterday that did not get on the current matrix that I'm aware of, and I think we may have gotten another one this morning by email. Various topics.
Great, thanks. The matrix looks good. I think anybody can read real easily where we're at and how many requests we get. I like that. Thank you. Okay, moving on to committee reports. If you have your reports, let's give them. If you don't, we'll do it next time. How's that? Wastewater committee report? Yeah. We didn't meet. Water ops committee. Do you have a report you'd like to give? Just a brief oral?
Sure.
The Water Operation Committee met last night for the second time. We meet the second Wednesday of the month at 6:30 at CSD office. And the agenda last night was introductions,
and then to elect a chairperson and a vice chairperson. And we did that, and the new chair is Chuck Sneed, and the vice chair is Keith Swanson. And we talked about Mr. Milanes. Thank you for your report tonight, Mr. Milanes. Very good. He also was there, and he gave us an update, and actually a briefing of the Water Master Plan, so our new committee members can kind of get up to speed on what it is this community is doing out there to improve our water system. And there's a lot of improvements necessary. And our Water Master Plan developed by John Wallace Group a couple of years ago is a roadmap to that. And we're in the process of implementing those roadmaps. There's a number of them that we have to do to get our system up to where it needs to be. And it's a long time in coming. I'm afraid the system's been neglected for a lot of years and needs a lot of attention. And so George gave us a very good presentation, a summary on what the Water Master Plan is all about. And then we also talked quite extensively on the lateral work that's being accomplished to date and where we're at and how much it's costing and the kind of work that's being accomplished while we're doing this and the status of that. And then he also talked about some of the things he talked about tonight, which is item number 9, was the booster pump stations and the cost of that and what that's going to do for the pressure for Los Osos. We're at about 20 PSI, and there's new, I believe it's either codes or regulations coming that's going to ask us to hit around that 40 PSI. And so that's the one of the items in the Water Master Plan that we have to accomplish to get to that kind of pressure is to increase our booster pump stations. And so that's what George talked about tonight to the public, and that's in progress, or it's in design. We're, I think it's around 60%, looking at 100% later on this summer, start construction. In the summer, looks like next summer before we get our pressure that we need. We're about, I think I mentioned this, Golden State, and there's effort to acquire that property. So we have enough land to build a new storage tank up there to give us the storage necessary, as defined in a Water Master Plan, to meet our needs in case of fires and high peak hours. What else did we talk about? One of the things came up that we talked about meters, the fact that about half of the meters in town have been replaced, out of 2,700, about 1,400 have been replaced, and then we're looking at, instead of meter readers, possible radio control type efforts, I think, in the future, something down the road that's being discussed. Another item that came up that caused quite a bit of discussion was the loss of water that, well, it's not really loss of water. No, well, maybe it is, but it's unaccounted for water. There seems to be an imbalance of how much water we're producing and how much we're using that's just not accounted for, and we're just not real sure where it's at. And that's about 32%. This is about where we're sitting at today. as reported by Mr. Milanes last night, that's something that really needs to be addressed and corrected as quickly as we can, and that's what we're doing. And we, George feels like a lot of that's coming from the laterals, from the main lines in the road that go up to the properties, and that's what's being replaced today. So it's an ongoing effort to reduce our losses in our water system, but again, they've been neglected for a lot and a lot of years. So we're in the process of doing that. It can't all be done at once. It does take a lot of money, a lot of resources. But that's an item that raised eyebrows last night, so we're going to keep looking at that. And I think that's about where we're at. George, I think, talked about needing a backhoe. That's something else that we'll have to come bring back to the board one of these days in the near future. And that the rate study is necessary, and we're still looking to have a rate study done fairly soon so we know what kind of rates need to be charged to our users to be able to pay for the improvements that we're doing. And that's something that has to be an ongoing
study. I think there was one done, when was the last, I'm not sure, 2002? I think it was, or three. And so we're about at a time where we need another one done. So we're looking into that. That's on our next agenda, an agenda item for the next meeting. And what else is on our next agenda item? So the rate study, we're looking at just the general operations of the water department every day. And we're going to also look at our bylaws next time. And that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great report. Finance Committee report, I think we'll wait for Steve and we'll do that next week, unless you have anything else to add, Mr. Buskey?
Nothing on that
committee. Environmental Committee for Director Sassania.
The Environmental Review Committee, I guess that's Environmental Review and Parks for the time being. We met Tuesday night for our second meeting. Meeting before, we had elected Melissa Mooney as chair and Dave some relevant sections from the Estero Area Plan for the rest of the committee, and we're trying to get a handle on how they relate. The HCP Estero Area Plan Coastal Commission does not want to approve this part of the Estero Area Plan until we get a wastewater project done, but Cayucas and the North Coast want theirs approved now so that they can move on with planning. There's talk about separating those two parts of the Estero Area Plan up. Some of those issues we're trying to come to grips with. And that really took up most of the night, it seemed like. There was one other thing I wanted to bring up, but it's slipping my mind right now. Those were the key items. We did not bring in consultants. We thought about bringing Crawford, Montari, and Clark out to update us on HCP progress, but really there hasn't been anything done since October or so, and I can understand that. I think the need now is for us to convene all of the stakeholders, which would be the county, Fish and Wildlife Service, Fish and Game, National Estuary, and all the resource agencies, and just get the HCP moving again, because there will be no development, even with a wastewater project, without that happening, at least outside the prohibition zone. So that is still an issue that we need to get moving on. And we'll be meeting again May 3rd.
I just have one question on that. Did you by any chance think about maybe asking the county if they might participate on your committee with the HCP? Because that goes back to the Estero Plan and their involvement and
well, possibly when we get into the meat of the HCP, we could ask them out to the meetings.
I just think maybe someone would like to come. They did, what was it, springtime? Signed back on to agreeing to help work on the HCP?
Yeah, it was August, actually, when the County Board of Supervisors agreed to participate in the HCP. And we've all seen a letter from November for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife suggests that the county be the lead agency on the HCP. So we're going to have a little struggle there. Not surprising.
I think that'll be a big struggle.
Did they appoint anybody, a staff person at that time, or just renewed their commitment?
Their environmental staff is working.
Yeah, Ellen Rognes, I believe, is our contact.
Great. Okay. All right. Any other? Ellen. Okay, yeah. Any other questions for? Thank you for that report. Emergency Services, Director Tacker.
All right, really briefly. Today in our mailbox, we received a letter of resignation from one of our committee members. I want to thank Dick Sargent for his participation all these years under the old board's regime, under ours. So thank you again for your service. But that leaves an opening. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Sargent. That leaves an opening on our committee. So those that might be interested in joining the Emergency Services Committee, do fill out an application and we will appoint. Our committee is lacking two alternate positions also. So we're kind of shorthanded up there. But like I tell Chief Veneris, that fire department's on autopilot, and we're really happy with the work. Our citizens are very involved, and that's exciting, too. I wanted to re-announce or reiterate what Chief Venera said about the April 22nd open house at the Vons parking lot with equipment and gear, and it is a requirement that committee members participate that day. So I took the day off of work. I'll be down there Saturday. But I was Mr. Boykin was talking about the cleanup days. I'm thinking, how can I split my day and then maybe still get a few hours with my kids? But I will. I will. And then there was a question that came up, and I thank you, Chief, for asking the question about dissolution and its impact on the fire department. And the question is, if we dissolve the district, what happens to our most recent fire tax? Now, I did ask our legal staff, and the tentative opinion is that the fire tax will dissolve with the district. So I think that's an unintended consequence of the actions of those who want who support dissolution. I don't believe they wanted to dissolve the fire tax, and that would consequently send the county back through an election process, and we would have to vote for those further funds to further services for our CDF fire. We would remain under CDF, but I don't think people realize the ripple effect of dissolution, and that's something that they should consider as that subject kind of heats up. That's all I have for emergency services. Pardon me? We do meet on the third Tuesday of each month at the fire station, and we are meeting at 5 o'clock. I just forgot. 5 o'clock. Okay.
Okay. Okay, yeah, and next week is when she's going to be meeting. Right. Okay, any questions for Emergency Services Committee? Director Sassenia remembered his point.
Yes, that one last thing, and I probably wouldn't be allowed back to the next committee meeting if I hadn't brought this to you. There's some confusion about when parks was added to the Environmental Committee purview, because we're not a land use authority. We don't have parks. I mean, not the district doesn't that I know. So the committee was pretty unanimous about dropping that part of their responsibility, since there really aren't any, and the title, too. So I'd like the board to think about that. We don't have to take any action on it tonight. I haven't really put anything out there that way, but be thinking about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ad hoc committee reports are next, and I don't have these are the ones that are here. If you'd like to speak, that's fine. And Morro Bay National Estuary Program, the executive committee has not met since I last reported, so I don't have anything. Do you have anything on implementation committee?
The implementation committee's met once, and we're going to have a workshop to review the work plan. It's coming up on the 20th of April. That would be
hoping next week. You will all receive a cub edition of our Bear Pride. This is an entirely volunteer effort. There's copies here tonight. Oh, good. I want to thank Lindy Owen for staying up till the wee hours of the morning. I think I see email that comes in at 6 a.m., and that means she's been up all night working on it. Pat Renshaw, thank you both for your graphic design, and everybody on the committee's editing and writing. I think everyone's going to be happy with what we get out next week. Something interesting that came about in our research working on the newsletter was in our discussions about committees and the good hard work that's happening in committees. And just for fun, we sort of added up how many of our neighbors are working in committee. And I'm very proud to say that 50, give or take a few, 50 people from Los Osos are involved in the committees for the CSD. And we should all be very proud, and I sure am, because it's their time, their energy, lots of research. I know everybody participates in research and bringing great ideas back to the committee, to the community services district. And that ultimately helps the board in its decision-making process. So I want to thank you.
I thank you as well. I know we all appreciate the hard work that you've done. The next ad hoc committee report is the Regional Water Quality Control Board coordination. And as most of you know, our negotiating team is Vice President Fouché and Director Sasania, and Mr. Blesky and Mr. Miller. Would you like to report on anything? Want to do it next time? Next time? Mr. Miller, do you have anything? Would you like to summarize?
Sure, Madam President. I had a good meeting last week. I think the key issues are keeping them up to date on the status of our project report update. That's their primary focus. We presented the scope of work that was negotiated, the schedule, and reiterated that it was a very aggressive schedule that we were trying to keep, which I think we got that message across. There was quite a bit of discussion on the ACL sites and how those were related to the primary project that they want to see accomplished. But all in all, the tone of the meeting was good, and we're continuing to keep them updated. So you know, they obviously want to see that progress, and they want to see a timeline. So we're keeping them up to date. Thank
you. Great, thank you. Any questions from board members? Okay, and then the final ad hoc committee report would be the LAFCO coordination, and that's Director Tacker and myself are on that committee. And I just continuing to keep in touch with Mr. Hood and members of the county. We've kind of increased our level of communication with the county and to make sure that they know what we're doing and what we're doing every week, so they're informed through emails and presentations at the state board of at the Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesdays. And Director Tacker, you have anything to add to that? Yeah, we're just reaching out more and making sure that we're contacting them. We encourage you as citizens to do the same. You're part of this. You're participating on committees and coming to these meetings. You are surely welcome to go to your Board of Supervisors or LAFCO.
List of current resources that they didn't know were available, and we're compiling all that information for them starting today. So really trying to defer a lot of the repeat work that would tend to be done by looking at everything that was done in the past. But it's a good kickoff, and they're running. So
great. Thanks. Great. Thank you. It's encouraging to hear. Any other questions from the board? All righty. On to consent calendar. Let's review what we pulled and what we're talking about. We postponed. Mr. Blesky?
Madam President, members of the board, under the consent, the items that we have pulled are item 5, consent item 6. Excuse me. Those are going to be continued.
Continued, sorry.
Item 7 is continued. Item 8 was originally going to be continued. I understand there's some comments on that. Item 9 is continued. And item 12 is continued.
Okay. Thank you. And item 8, did we have a request from the board to pull that item? No, just more for discussion. So we can have discussion on it, but we may still continue it.
Okay.
So we're ready for public comment. 3 minutes apiece. Come on up.
Good evening. George Taylor, Los Osos. I don't mind leading off. I am going to address tonight, I'm going to address our water. I want to talk about our water supply, which is our lower aquifer, which we all get our drinking water, our water for dishwashing, for showers, the whole thing. In the Bear Pride, they've made a very, very good choice of words. They used a slogan, slow the flow, which is a very good one because we all need to slow down on the use of our most precious resource that we have here. We use way too much water. We can all cut back on water, whether it's in washing dishes, whether it's showering, whether it's clothes washing. You have cycles on all your machines that allow you to vary the amount of water that you use and use the very least that you can. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because I want to make it clear that we do have saltwater intrusion. that is impairing our water supply. And it's going to keep coming in faster and faster until we find a solution to getting some water back into the ground there that's going to slow that down. But until that time, we have got to slow down on our use of it, or we're going to be in very great jeopardy. In fact, I'd like to use an old cliche, and that is, we never think about water until you turn on that faucet and nothing comes out. And then the time when everybody gets really, really serious.
With a temporary interim reduction number. And they seem to imply that alternative systems simply won't be allowed because they don't want to basically let the camel in the tent, and they don't want anything that will not result in the 7 milligram ultimately. But if you have a system, it seems to me that even with its eyes half closed, can deliver way over 22% without needs for additional permits and costly testing, then the question for the regional board would have to be, do you really want to clean up water as quickly as possible in the interim, or do you want to just have a lot of regulatory argle-bargle going on? And so that's what's a puzzle to me. If they are confusing ultimate 7 milligrams with temporary 22, and there is a fast fix that would be a lot better for the environment than pumping, it seems to me, it's curious to me why they wouldn't be able to go ahead and acknowledge that, and then whatever system met 22% easily could be installed by the community and so forth. Thank you.
I'll briefly respond. The data that was submitted to the regional board demonstrates certainly at the 22% level there would certainly be that level of reduction. But again, part of the rationale for putting in the fire station system was in fact to confirm that. So I mean, that's the main issue. Now, one thing I forgot to mention when I spoke before is that tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock we will be at the firehouse, and we welcome anybody to come by and look at the system. And anybody in the public or from the board is welcome to come by. We'll be there from 9 to 11. So you're welcome. Just make sure you don't park in the driveway there. They go crazy at the firehouse.
You find that out yourself?
Thank you. Anton Vesely, Los Osos. Also regarding the Piranha system, it's been my understanding that most of the nitrate contamination comes from the urine component of sewage, not the sludge. And I've been told that urine is pretty much a pass-through on a septic system. So the Piranha system, as you described it, as I understand, works, it primarily enhances what's going on inside the tank. And it helped, but you described how it freed up the leach field. But that urea or urine decomposition, how does a Piranha... How's it going to help that? I just don't see where is it happening, inside the tank, outside the tank? It all depends on where you measure it, too. Could you clarify, please?
Briefly again, most of the evidence that we've looked at and most of our studies have been in the ground after the tank, because that's where the microbiological reaction of where your change between ammonia to either nitrate or to nitrogen gas occurs. So it really is a function of what's happening outside of the tank. I do have systems that we've done in the tank before, but they're more difficult to regulate. But it's more dependable when you're going into an existing leach field that already has the microbiological community that carries it out. So again, that's what we're primarily looking at, is in the ground. Yeah.
So Dr. Rickham.
With regard to pumping as opposed to getting something interim that would achieve the 22% reduction, I would assume that you would also have to test below or a citizen would have to test below their leach field prior to installation of the system. So that's my question. Have you done the testing at the locations where you're installing the system so you'll have a baseline to compare to? Thank you.
The system at the firehouse was done before we really had a chance to, but we will be... process is a time-consuming process. I mean, it takes several months before you're going to be showing your dramatic reductions. So what you do is you start it as quickly as possible to it. I would, if we have the opportunity to do other systems within this community, that would be part and parcel of it. But, you know, it's mobilizing and getting things done sometimes is difficult. But certainly over time period, you can see reductions, and we do have data that showed at Trout Creek, Michigan, under leach beds where we were first starting out. These were existing systems. They were loaded. They had lysimeters at 6 inches, 12 inches, and 24 inches underneath the leach bed, and they watched a change in the nitrogen concentration, a gradual reduction over a 3 to 4 month period. We went back and resampled after about 7 months, and what happened, the total inorganic nitrogen had gone from somewhere close to 100 milligrams per liter down to about 3 over that time period. And so that, those data are there. That was done under the Michigan DEQ's aegis with an engineering company.
I don't know if you're familiar with our past studies. Right. Mr. Tkach is a soil scientist and engineer. Oh. And there are studies that show ambient levels of nitrate that are higher just from dead plants. So he's getting at this baseline because we already know that we've got issues with nitrates just from dead plants and other items. And so
you do. I looked at the data that you had, too, on your nitrate. And there were a lot of questions I had about the data there as to whether your nitrate sources really were from septic. As an ecologist looking at those data set, there were discrepancies that I would, without knowing much more, when I first looked at them, I was looking at saying, well, you know, this doesn't necessarily convince me. It's from septic. There are other ways to see whether septic effluent is going down there than nitrate. And I didn't really see the accompanying data to really document it was actually septic caused.
Will your monitoring be able to determine that?
Well, we would be monitoring within a foot or so of the actual discharge point of the leachate. Independent of that, if I can show declines in a 1 foot zone, I can make implications from that. Yeah.
Yes, next speaker, who would like to speak next? Mr. Swanson?
Keith Swanson, Los Osos. A lot to cover in 3 minutes. Ann Calhoun pretty much asked this question. I think one of the, at least the issue here for Los Osos is nitrate reduction. And the Regional Water Quality Control Board looks at discharge from the tank, doesn't incorporate the leach field as being part of the process. And it sounds like that's what he's measuring to see the success of the process is by clearing up the leach field and making it work better. Pumped it out, okay. Because it doesn't work too well. I can't pump on anything if there's nothing there. And how long do you anticipate it's going to be before you start getting the first bit of data? I'm just jumping around here because there's a lot of things on this, you know, the water committee, water ops committee. There was things about that as far as the utility leader that was that resigned was also the same thing. The person, I understand, is driving the truck down to Avila Beach or down to Pismo Beach. And there was a response as to, well, if we find another person that's going to be living in that area, he'll be able to take the truck home there too. And at gas closing on $3 a gallon, that's a lot of money plus wear and tear on the vehicle. There was a bit of a heated discussion regarding the replacement of the lines, and I think we need to look back on the minutes of when this was all approved, because I think there was a cap that he had to come back to you after they got to a certain amount that were completed or dollar amount that was completed to come back to the board for authority. What I got last night was that he's going to go ahead and he has authority for spending $500,000 if he has to, though he doesn't want to because he's under budget now. But I need for the board to kind of look into the clarification for that. And I just to point out is that, as Mr. Blesky mentioned, is that there was no remediation ever done by the county or by the old CSD about any of the ACL sites, and it's not until this board came in and has addressed something that should have been taken care of while we're planning on a project. Thank you.
As it relates to chemicals that would be put into a septic tank, one should always be careful.
our system is more robust than a standard septic, but, you know, people always have to be cautious of what they're doing. So that's what my recommendation.
And then he had another question about data. How soon would the data?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I would expect to be within about 2 months I should be starting to. Well, we'll have data relatively quickly on sort of some of your standard parameters in the tank, things like BOD and that type of stuff. We took a baseline sample from the tank before we pumped the tank itself, so we know what was going into the leach field, and we're going to be measuring BOD, TSS, fecal coliform. We're looking at all the different forms of nitrogen, and then what we'll have that as a baseline, and so that type of in-tank data can go very quickly, and I would hope to start seeing data from the soil. I would suspect somewhere within 2 to 3 months we'll have a pretty good sense of what's happening. Yeah.
And then I have a follow-up question. Uh-huh. Do you take a data point from the tank? Just for curious sake, I mean, do you?
We will be following in the tank as
before
well.
Before you go to the leach field, do you take one?
What would happen is the sampling in the tank would be done right at the effluent port where it's going out to the leach field.
That'd be interesting to know too.
Yeah, and that's what we'd be monitoring there in the tank. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you, Mr. Brewer. Oh, sorry. Mr. Miller?
Madam President, I think I can handle one of the questions there. As far as whether a piranha would mitigate the need to meet all the step requirements that Keith was thinking of, those are requirements only of the source of funding, the state revolving fund, not requirements of code or any other governmental entity.
It's somewhat similar. In effect, we have a bioreactor that's acting on a surface like a membrane bioreactor. The only difference is a membrane bioreactor is the water is being pushed through a biological entity through a filtering apparatus. They're much, much more complicated. They involve extreme high levels of maintenance on them. And they really cannot be done at an individual home level. They have to be done at a centralized level simply because you need the staff and the actual ability to actually operate one of these things. Homeowner system never could. The regional board doesn't approve systems like this. The regional board has nothing to do with systems below 1,500 gallons a day in the state of California. That's designated to the county. The regional board's only role here is because they put a prohibition on your zone. So to me, the regional board is almost irrelevant. Unless I'm working with systems that are above 1,500 gallons per day, I don't deal with that entity. I deal strictly at the county level because that's where the actual authority lies. This is probably the only place in the entire state where the regional board has anything at all to say about an individual septic tank.
Yes.
Good evening, Madam President and board, staff, Gail McPherson, Los Osos. I've enjoyed my time away. I've been gone for a couple of weeks and had a great vacation, ready to roll again. We will have a wastewater committee meeting, I'm assuming, on the 18th. And although we won't be having a workshop, the workshop was supposed to talk about on-site and a lot of these things that we're discussing and that you've made much progress on. I'm so surprised in just a couple of weeks that I've been gone how much has changed and how much you've moved forward, how much you've accomplished. It's wonderful. I feel like I want to get back on an airplane and take off again. But anyway, we will be meeting. I also wanted to bring it up to your attention that with the CDOs, we'll also be meeting on Monday the 17th and also the following Monday at Washington Mutual, anyone who's interested in the CDOs. I want to point out that the staff report from the regional board changed quite dramatically on the 5th that was posted on their site, the same day that you designated parties submitted your information. So you had one staff report that described what you were being accused of, basically, and then as you defended yourself with your submittal, it was changed. So this is a moving target, and one of the things that is mainly moving, it looks like, is they've changed from nitrates to pathogens and also to all other. They're going to essentially make your septic tank meet all the discharge requirements that a treatment plant would meet. And so for other information on what changes and what the ramifications are and how you can defend yourself, I suggest to come to the meeting on the 17th. And the only other thing I had is that I look forward to getting some information from the other members, including John.
Just asking about the added bacteria. And I wanted to know what it was and where it comes from, how did they develop it. And if you have to keep adding it, just some questions about how that works. But I just really want to commend the board for doing so much work and moving so forward on this. It really was a pleasure to come in tonight and hear his explanation and see the simplicity of some of the things, how they work. I liked his explanation of the complicated parts in the biology. So thank you very much for job well done.
As to the bacteria, yes, in fact, we do add a specific group of bacteria. They are isolates from the soil leaf litter zone. All of them, they come from the American Type Collection. They're manufactured in a laboratory in Virginia, actually, which is a large bacterial supply house. So they're commercially available. They're widely used. They're one of the most ubiquitous groups of bacteria in nature. You walk through the forest floor, you're going to kick up a billion spores and breathe them all the time. So they're very, very benign. We only add them. We make the change. It's part of the maintenance program, and it's only done once a year. So it's a relatively simple process.
Madam President, Board, it's nice to be standing here. Mr. Wickham, I'm quite impressed with your presentation. And I suspect it works even if you have your gray water going into your system.
Mr. Moreland, same kind of thing. Ask your questions here, and then he'll come up and ask them just so the microphone can pick it up.
Okay, so one of the questions I have is, does it continue to work even though your gray water is also going into your system? And if it does, I'd like to hop on your bandwagon as soon as possible. But facing the local regional quality water quality control board is like trying to budge an elephant that's determined to sit down. Speaking of a new game plan, I got this on the 11th. This is the new CDO, and it's not just a proposed CDO anymore. It's post-dated April 28th, and it says that I've already been heard. So that's going to be really interesting. When I go there, I'm going to say, what was the outcome of my hearing? This is for you, Lisa. Yeah, I've already been heard. That's amazing to me. They must be back to the future or something. And if you can sway the RWQCB, God, I hope the heck you can, because, like I say, it's like working with an elephant. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Moyer.
As to gray water, frequently we are dealing with customers in most systems that have failed systems and put in gray water to accomplish whatever they could. And one of the first things that happens is we encourage them to put their gray water back in the septic tank. And because gray water systems are really problematic, and it's really much easier, you know, just simply to recombine it. It doesn't affect treatment really well.
What was on the agenda? We weren't discussing what was on the agenda. And I think it was counterproductive. But finally, it came to play. Tighten up crew efficiency. Cost analysts of work hours. And we have to have them for a week's worth of time. And I keep telling them they want a cost analysis for work on these pipes. A week's worth. And I say, well, you got to do it over a period so you know when they're working on pipes or fixing stuff because of the rains or whatever. And I don't think they're going to spend enough time on that. I think I spoke toward trying to micromanage the utilities department, and I thought it was a bad idea at this time. I also told them about how the county is now working towards changing drill plans and all the different They're going to be establishing all of the environmental criteria that's supposed to be laid out in such and such plan. And they're going to go without us. We got 6 months to get in it and another 6 months to argue with them. And they're going to move on smart growth 500 policies, as well as probably adopt some of the 2025 policies of the Regional Water Quality Control Board with controls, environment, wastewater, wetlands, ponding, as well as agricultural open space. And that was D2 of the supervisors meeting just Thursday. Now, they're making decisions that we should be aware of and we should be involved with. And not having enough time to explain it, but I think I had been voted or given an ad hoc position for communication with the county on this process at that meeting. Is that so, John? Do you remember? It was by the chair. Right. And I just want to make sure that I can go and talk to these people and report back to that committee, and I'll be told later, no, we didn't tell you you couldn't do that. I want to declare that you told me to be the person, the front person, to get involved if I want what's going to affect this board and you're not aware of because you're not reading the agendas or whatever. Is that correct? That's the discussion for
wait a second.
Committee.
We're not going back and forth. Finish your comments.
That's it.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Vice President Fouché, would you like to say anything?
Dave, can we talk offline and we'll discuss that?
No, because that was a committee appointment and I want to make sure that the public knows it was made and it was agreed upon. I just want to make sure that we have the parameters correct.
Well, did we take a vote at the committee for that?
I was an ad hoc appointment.
By?
The board chair. Okay. It's on. Okay, let's just do it. Let's just do it off then. But you got to remember that you guys made a decision, a board chair decision.
Dave, I'd like to talk offline, but it was made after we adjourned the meeting.
No, it was during the meeting. Sorry.
Well, we have minutes. We'll go by that.
Okay.
Let's talk offline. We'll talk
about
it.
And then, Mr. Dugan,
so you got to have to remember.
Mr. Dugan, your time is
I'm not going to get that kind of appointment and then turn around somebody
Mr.
saying,
Dugan.
Let's talk offline. Thank you.
And as far as micromanaging, when you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, of which many of the discussions entailed last night, I don't think that's micromanaging. I think micromanaging is when you're talking about, you know, 10-cent paperclip. When you're talking about $200,000 items, you know, it's good to have open discussion and some controversy in the committees. I remember a lot of controversy at the Emergency Services Committee and Finance Committees a year ago, but that saved the community a lot of money in the long run. I'm going to go real quick because there's a lot of things here. Tuckfield doing the water rate study, that needs to be a board discussion. It was a discussion last night at the Water Ops Committee. I don't think they've served the community. He served the community well in the past. The bond issue was brought up. I don't know if that's an opinion at this point from Mr. Blesky or if he's actually talked to a bond counsel or gotten an attorney's opinion, but that's got to be a serious agenda item discussion at some point. The fire department, Phil wants to talk about the asphalt driveway item. I think that either needs to be pulled or you should have discussion about that. Ripley is under the has started their update. Have we determined what the retainer is at this point that he's being paid? How much is the annual maintenance for the Piranha system? And the last thing I want to talk about is the $10,000 contributions from Montgomery Watson Harza and Barnard Construction to the Save the Dream Coalition between 9/11, 2005, and the election to 27, 2005. We heard from the other side that they had, hundreds of contributors, or most of them were small contributors, and blah, blah, blah. I ran the numbers the other day, and their top five contributors contributed more than half of what the recall committee contributed. The people that donated to the recall committee contributed in whole. $58,000 for the recall committee, $133,000 for the no on recall. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we get some answers?
Mm-hmm, you will. Mr. Wickham first. Mm-hmm. Just stay there, though, just in case we forget one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our typical maintenance charge, and it varies, of course, from dealer to dealer, but it usually runs about $150 a year, so it's maybe $12 a month, somewhere in that range.
Okay, and then the Ripley contract, Mr. Lesky?
We have not calculated that retainer out, but we'll bring that back for the public to let you know.
Okay, what was your other question?
The bonds.
The bond.
I didn't quite understand the question. If I could just ask the speaker to clarify.
You stated that there's 2.4, which back then was going to net us $2.2 million.
The risk of getting a high interest rate. At this time, and without all of our other accounts cleared up and knowing those in detail, for example, our cash accounts and how they map into our reserves, that's of great concern to me right now. We're working that. So as that relates to bonds, can't make a decision on what we want to. That's using bonds right now, in my opinion, would be the last thing that I would want to do at this time. Two reasons. One is, we wouldn't get the most bang for the buck. We'd pay a lot more to pay them back. They're high risk to anyone that would, well, they would be viewed as high risk, according to Standard & Poor's, by anyone that would want to purchase them. And secondly, they are burdening the ratepayers, and this is my opinion right now. I'm not convinced that the risk to the ratepayers is going to get them what they need. And yes, that would, if we had to go to selling bonds, I would consider that to be a last resort right now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of work that needs to be done before we go there.
Is this going to be part of discussion on Monday at finance?
No, I'm not looking to. I'm not looking even there. I'm looking to clean up the accounts. Right
okay,
now.
First. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the question on. I forgot now. Oh, the fire station, the driveway.
Okay, we're going to, thank you very much. Yep, that's taken care of. Okay, this is still our public comment on consent and reports.
Lindy Owen, Prohibition Zone. I am on the Water Committee, so I would like to say that what I understand happened at the committee about someone going in and starting to do meetings and cover different agency actions that are going on was just a suggestion that we could be missing some important meetings. And if you don't go look at the agenda packets, you don't know that Los Osos is being discussed in a bulk subject. And Dave has been quite the watcher and had suggested that he would be willing to do it. And we bantered back and forth, but I don't think it was completely decided upon by the whole committee, but I think it's an excellent idea and ad hoc that could be people that want to be agenda and meeting watchers. We need to be keeping an eye on what's going on countywide with some of the larger agencies too, because we're missing out on a lot, I think, by not being everywhere, and we can't do that obviously because there's not enough of us. So maybe a volunteer committee would be good to start just keeping an eye on things and keeping track. And then through all the discussion that's gone on this evening, I think the piranha's exciting to see that that's going to get tested. What I don't see is a very coordinated effort. And from the Ripley report, the Ripley team is going to be looking at all the different types of technologies on site, et cetera. Well, then we're also contracting with NC2, I don't know how to pronounce it, engineering. And he's going to be doing exactly the same. And so I think maybe I would like to see a little bit more coordination with maybe Dr. Ruhr, who is our nitrate specialist, worldwide nitrate specialist.
Elements. and that's been put into the in situ, which is the pronunciation, in situ engineering scope. And so there is no overlap there, but we do have the benefit of Dr. Rohr on the Ripley team if we need some consultation there.
Great, thank you. Mr. Buskey.
I think the speaker brought up some good things, and I'm really, I want to get this message out. And I'll try to do it in the Reader's Digest version. Essentially, what we're looking at doing is we have a number of challenges in front of us. One is to move the project forward, which is the main focus, which is what Ripley Pacific's going to be doing. The other thing that needs to move more quickly was the cleanup of our ACL sites, or the some kind of mitigation or progress. And just if I can explain what our thoughts were and why we're paralleling the activity with those ACL sites is because we've only been fined on those. And we can move quicker, as evidenced with the Piranha. We've started a process to evaluate a cleanup of Site 1. What in situ will be bringing to us is not only their experience with similar California, difficult California communities, they will be looking at our septic management plan because we can make it better. We can, make sure things are cleaned up. And we could also start looking at how that would impact the revenue stream and those results. In other words, how do we fund this cleanup on that, on making sure the systems we do have are operating optimally? What also goes with that is the efforts with what in situ will be bringing to us when they look at Vista de Oro and Bay Ridge, and along with the Piranha and other systems like Dr. Alexander's Glutenator, and we also have this Earthship that's on the agenda. How do we fit that in? Well, they fit more closely with a septic management program, and so we're paralleling those efforts. The key thing here is one of the reasons why we paralleled the ACL sites is all of those sites have one thing in common. They have the ability to immediately generate a revenue stream if we come up with a viable solution. Now, there's other challenges there. First of all, the public's going to know, hey, how much is this going to cost us and what's our chance of our likelihood of success? There we got to have the data, and then we've got to bring the costs. The other thing is that, I've lost my train of thought. It's been a long day. But it has to do with those parallel activities. They're all coordinated. For example, Mr. Miller did discuss about how we've pulled out that central and put it within situ. That's because we do have the ACL sites we have to address. We kind of look at those as the immediate action plan, the stuff we can get to the quickest, demonstrate to the regulatory agencies that this community is serious about cleaning up water. I remember what it was I wanted to comment on. Just as I cautioned about the hope that Piranha brings, let's wait for the numbers. And the other thing that comes is we're faced with the prohibition zone. That's enough money to do it twice.
That's right. Good. Okay, wrapping up more public comment on this is on general. This is not on your general public comment yet.
Right. Before I start, is there a comment on the report from the closed session? I wasn't here.
We didn't have closed session tonight, Mr. Sparks.
I know, but it said there was a report from. There was a report from closed session. Oh, okay, so there wasn't. All right. Since we're just talking about in situ, my comments are that I think for the time being you should downscope that and not include task 2 and task 4 and the reasons, and that you should downscope task 1 to the extent that it covers task 3, which is the ACL sites. And the reason is that I think you should consider involving the county and the county paying for task 2 and task 4 and looking at amending that task to try to get the county involved in terms of cooperation or trying to get them to pay for it. Though task 2 and task 4 are related to non-ACL sites, and those are permitted by the county. Those were permitted by the county. They're under control of the county in terms of the permitting process. The county has had staff already maybe doing parallel activities in terms of doing a framework plan for properties within the county on 885. So you may be doing redundant work that the county's already doing. So I really think you should consider the value of Task 2 and Task 4 and also incurring, taking responsibility for something that I don't think is your responsibility on Task 2 and Task 4. Task 3, yes, and downscoping Task 1 to the extent that it supports Task 3 should be considered. And I know that was continued. Another question for Mr. Wickham. I know he was talking in terms of data, in terms of the soil, but does he have data in terms of actually the effluent out of the septic tank with his system installed? Because the practical matter is the Regional Water Quality Board just doesn't give you much credit for any soil remediation, and the soil sites vary from site to site. So as a practical matter, even though he'll get that data, it becomes a regulatory issue into how much credit you get. My discussions with the regional board are just that they don't have a way of giving you more than a couple percent credit for that. And my time's up. The other question, Mr. Miller is going over with Ripley in terms of sites that he's looking at. Again, how does he know that those sites are valid under Measure B with the language in proximity to residential buildings? So, you know, is Ripley going to look at sites that are legally challengeable? You know, the district engineer hasn't determined what's acceptable. Your legal counsel hasn't determined what's acceptable. You don't want to get litigated. We don't want to get litigated in the future on this. So maybe it'll be moot tomorrow, and hopefully it will be with the Measure B going down, and then hopefully all the litigation would go away and all you guys would settle after that. That'd be a miracle. But we can dream. Thanks.
Mr. Wickham? Is that mic reverberating or is it just my ears? It sounds like you're in an echo chamber. Okay.
We will be sampling in the tank as well. We will be looking at it. I think one of the issues with soil treatment and the notion that regional board does not give credit to soil treatment, the basin plan itself.
Madam President, on the last point with regard to Measure B, a point well taken. They do have some engineering level evaluations, a macro evaluation, but after this week's hearing, we are very interested in trying to bring forth that legal opinion, at least to get some validation of whatever sites that we're bringing forward to the community, to make sure we at least have one legal opinion that they do comply with Measure B. But it's a drama I think he should continue to beat.
Great, thanks. Next speaker, please.
Michael Jones, Los Osos. I just scratched out some notes on this. I hope I can read them. But on the there was mention that Barnard and Montgomery contributed money to save the dream. Well, when I went to vote over in the Baywood, there were two guys in line that had Barnard Construction T-shirts on. So money wasn't the only thing they donated. I like the Piranha presentation. It's this type of innovative experimentation that changes the world. Today you see lots of people walking down the streets with these hands-free wireless phones. And if you saw somebody 15 years ago walking down the street talking to themselves, you'd think they were a nut job. But someday maybe we'll all have Piranha laptops and joke about all the money and energy wasted on conventional Tri-W type systems. And somebody try and tell me that we here in Los Osos don't care about clean water or that we're not trying to do anything about it. It seems to me like we're on the cutting edge of the future of this technology and stuff, and I thank you for that and experimenting with this stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barrow, would you like to speak next?
Sure. Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to announce that yesterday this document was submitted for each of the board members at the Water Board. This is 6 years of research and development, 6 years of scientific testing. This is not an experimental technology. It's been in place in a number of places here in California and throughout the United States. And I also like to point out that Dr. Wickham, not only did he matriculate UC Berkeley but he got a master's and a PhD degree, and then he was selected to do research in their marine research for 20 years. So we're not dealing with a dummy here. And if anybody wants to have a fun argument, get in an argument with Dan. You might not win. Anyway, this is a document is available online. I have it, and if the district would like to put it on electronically, I think that can be arranged. We have that. Some points. The septic tanks are pumped once, which is a compliance, obvious compliance with the water board's desire with the piranha. And number two, they're associated with a large engineering firm who's done $1 billion worth of conventional wastewater and other types of wastewater, and that would be Gordy Freight. So they're in Creek Labs, and you will see those documentations. We also install risers so that it's acceptability, so that when the septic tank management program comes along, they will be there. And you can go to the fire department tomorrow and see those things and see how attractive it looks. It's very small, not much impact. The water board has received all these copies, as I said, and I think the community, if they have a desire to clean up, this would be one affordable way of improving our basin quickly. Thank you.
Anybody else want to speak for this part of the agenda? Mr. Allaby?
Hey, Chris Allaby, Los Osos. First, I'd like to thank Dr. Wigamere for his presentation. It's one of the best I've heard in the last 15 years. His system's easy to install. Non-tech workers can install them. Replaces groundwater on site. Non-disruptive to streets and landscaping. No multi-million dollar loans to pay back. We're looking at $5,000 a unit, $25 million for the entire prohibition zone, with probably some money left over. And for those reasons, it will probably never be approved in a million years. My CDO is even better than Bill's over there, okay? They've been sending it to myself and my wife here two or three times. This time they addressed it to myself and my daughter, who hasn't lived in the house for 10 years. And I'll read, this is real good here. I got this on April the 11th. This is dated April 28th in the future. Line 5 here, the Water Board on April 28th in San Luis Obispo, California, held a public hearing and heard evidence regarding this order. So evidently, I've already been there and got beamed back here a couple of days. Okay. I watched the sixth meeting on TV there, and we finally got to Jeff Edwards and his dissertation on we got to do it fast, got to get some water, all this stuff. Well, I'll guarantee you that Mr. Edwards is working 26 hours a day to get this 99-year lease over here on the school, and if he gets that, he's going to need about 2 million toilet credits for the water ride on Sandy Hills. Yeah. So while we're doing all this, might be something to keep an eye on over there. Yeah, that's all I've got.
Thanks. Mr. Payne.
Good evening, board, staff, public, and Dr. Wickham. I really appreciated your presentation. Watched most of it at home before I got here. One of the things I was wondering was, did you test the effluent end of the septic tank, or is there samples taken? I just kind of wonder what the parts per what I want to say milligram site there was on it. Were they purged as recommended by Wade Brim? And if they were purged, how much water did they pump, and what did they do with the water? These are things that I'd like to know before the 28th of April, and it's really, those test wells are a big part of this alleged nitrate problem in our groundwater, as well as if you look at the map that Matt Thompson put up on his presentation at our workshop when they were picking our brain. He had an October water test figures on all the wells, and on one well it had 52 milligrams per liter. In both April and November, that same well tested 19 milligrams per liter. And one other thing I see on the litigation pending that you're still fighting our neighbors and our and myself to not have a 218 vote, the same as the old CSD board. And I'd like you to quit being in partnership with the state against this community. Thank you.
Director Tagger, would you even know the answer to that one?
Mr. Payne, the wells were addressed by the CSD in 2002. Mr. Miller might remember this better than I do. My recollection was $60,000 was spent, and there was great scrutiny by the community at that time, and I'm sure we can get a staff report and show you the pumping and the regime that for the testing that was done. I remember Mr. Barrow, Mr. Salmon, there was a great deal. Lindy Owen was there, we were hounding them the very same questions, and the data's there. Mr. Miller.
Yeah, I believe you're correct, and I think there is a report that was done at that time. I don't remember the cost of it, but I think a pretty complete report was done by Cleveland Associates, and we can put that, get a copy of that and put that up if we need to.
Mr. Wickham, if you'd like to answer it again, you can. If you, yeah, it's been asked a couple times tonight. Mr. Payne,
just
you might have been
briefly,
on the
way. Yes, we did test for nitrate, but I would like to comment that you have a most colorful community here, and it's really a pleasure to be here. It's pouring rain up at my house in Sonoma County, you know, and the river finally came up the bank the third time this year at the Russian River in front of my front yard, so wow. This place is great.
Yes. So, yeah. And Mr. Payne, you might have missed it, but it's been asked a couple times tonight, and he is testing the F1. Okay. All right. We're closing public comment on these items and bringing it back to the board. So I understand that, Mr. Chief Fineris, did you have something you wanted to say on one of these items that you wanted to add? I should ask you to come up now, too. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure the protocol. If it's not, I appreciate you letting me come back up, Madam President. I'm not sure the protocol, but if it's possible, I'd like the board to consider the asphalt project up at Station 15, $17,000 to $18,000 more expensive. It's our recommendation, as a manager of your fire station, that we fix that driveway as soon as possible to avoid having to replace it. Right now, there's probably 8 or 9 hot spots in that asphalt, and as the engines continue to drive over it, with the rains we've had this year and last year, those hot spots continue to grow, and so I'm not sure how much longer that driveway will be able to hold. So I'd just like to recommend that. Can I answer any questions?
Any questions from the board? Okay. Mr. Bleski, can we continue? Can we keep this item on the agenda tonight? And
yes.
Follow Chief's recommendations.
Yes.
If we're interested.
As part of the consent calendar.
Yeah, it's already on. Okay, thank you. All right, do I have a motion from anyone? I'd like to move that we adopt the consent calendar with the items as let Mr. Buskey continue to April 20th. And I don't know if we need to read them again, but I wish you would.
I can read the items that we're going to that are on tonight's consent. That
okay,
these
go
are
ahead.
Included.
These are the items that are on for tonight that we're adopting with my motion.
This would be item 4, receive administrative and committee reports. Item 8, award contract and authorize interim general manager to execute agreement for the asphalt paving of the South Bay Fire Station parking lot and yard. Item 10,
recommendation to authorize the installation of improvements to the septic system at the Yellow CSD water yard. And item 11, which is review and adopt modified 2006 board meeting calendar.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? A roll call vote, please.
Director Sesenia?
Yes.
Director Tacker?
Yes.
Vice President Fouché?
Yes.
President Sugar?
Yes. Thank you. I'd like to take a 10-minute break before we have general public comment. Thank you all for coming to this part of the meeting, and thank you to our speaker. Okay, everybody, could you have a seat? We're going to get ready. Start it again. We're opening up the meeting to general public comment. Everybody, hello? Hello, everybody. Could you take your seats, and then we're going to get started on the next part of the meeting? Thank you. This is the time when you can speak on anything that wasn't on the agenda.
Shocking to me to learn tonight that on the date that their submittals were due, the regional board changed their arguments as to what their arguments were going to be. So it would seem to me that the regional board has no choice but to continue their meeting for at least another month so that the people can respond to the new charges that they're being levied against them. My point is that don't let this letter intimidate, confuse, or harass you. Show up to the meeting and defend yourself. This may be a foregone conclusion, as we already know from Mr. Young's comments back in January when he asked to bring the individual orders to him as quickly as possible.
Just a second, Mr. T. Catch. I'm sorry, you guys. I can't hear. It's so distracting. You don't know. It's like echo chamber. Or just go back
in
the back.
And in the front of the room, too.
Yeah, I want to hear Mr. T. Catch. I'm sorry.
As I was saying, I just want the people that have to come and present their case and their arguments. It's important that you do that for the administrative record, to be there to make your arguments and to present your case. Because if they have made their decisions in their own mind, that's one thing, but you still have a right to defend yourself. Remember, this is being presented as a court case. There is a prosecution team, and you have a defense team. It's like a judge sending out a letter saying, we're going to hang you before they've even had the trial. And that's essentially what they've done. So don't let them intimidate you. Go down there and present your best arguments that you can, and do so that if it goes to court later on, you'll have at least had the opportunity to present your case. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else would like to speak?
Thank you. This is about a dream that the green sewer dragon had, which I think at times might have been a little more appropriate, but we'll see what he dreamed about. So, as we know, once there was a green sewer dragon who decided no more to roam, he and he looked at Los Osos, he decided that we should be his home. He then decided at first that he would be extremely welcome. And then he began to see the conflicts that were around the sewer dragon. Could not believe all of the possible conflicts there were. It was like a war. And the more the sewer dragon looked, the more warlike. Because he, by now, was tired of the conflict and began to dream. And as he dreamed, the same kind of all of these conflicts, and lo and behold, in the sewer dragon's mind, the water, salt water intrusion bubbles began to make a war. And the sewer dragon looked at the war because of all of our conflicting things that were going on. And the Regional Water Quality Control Board structure became a little bit less importance. And finally, one of the members in the dream, this man, looked up, and the Regional Water Quality Control Board was being dissolved by the saltwater bubbles, and the sewer dragon realized that once there was a sewer dragon who believed conflict can be a very creative thing. And you can take the opposing viewpoints and really find very interesting, creative ways of using it. So hopefully the sewer dragon will be welcomed, and the war that was in his, when he woke up, Los Osos is such a great place. We really have conflicts, but let's get creative about them and let the saltwater bubble dream go away with all the wars.
Thank you very much. Okay. Who else would like to speak during general public comment?
Chris Albee, Los Osos. Yeah, I've either attended or watched on TV all the political debates here, and I think that Judy Vick's going to be the best shot for us, give Los Osos the best fair shake. So that's all I got to say.
Thank you, Chris. Who else would like to speak? Please step up. Please come on up. Mr. Jones? Once, twice.
Michael Jones, Los Osos. I watched most of the last meeting on the Channel 20 replays. I did not follow the selection process, but I'm very impressed with Ripley, and I'm glad you selected him to develop our wastewater project report. I like his big picture vision of developing a sustainable project, minimizing the use of energy and natural resources, a project with a minimum 100-year lifespan that would serve us and the generations to come. I also remember the presentation the guy from Canada made last summer on ponding systems. I remember actually getting a bit upset as I watched, wondering why we didn't have something like this in place a long time ago. For a rural coastal village bordered by ag land, the ponding systems just make a lot of sense to me. It would be a perfect fit for our community. Let's see. I liked what Mr. Blesky said about looking to alternative methods for financing the project other than state SRF money. I've been following our sewer issue for almost 2 years, more actively coming to these meetings to speak my opinion for about a year. And after seeing how the state has treated our community over the past year, some type of grants or something, I inferred from his statement, though, that the costs of and funding was part of the wastewater project report. However, statements in the paper this week have said that financing is not a part of the project report. I understand cost is a what question. What is it going to cost? And financing is a how question. How are we going to pay for it? At the end of the day, there are two things the average Mike and Mary want to know. What are we going to do and how much is it going to cost? Our property values are high, but a good portion of our community consists of families and seniors on fixed incomes, living check to check as it is. Whatever the cost of the wastewater project, we need to finance it in a manner that most of our citizens will be able to make it work.
If this means trading a lower monthly payment for a longer-term financing that would increase the total cost, I think we have to do it that way. The state SRF funding didn't seem to afford us the sort of flexibility that private financing might. The community of Los Osos is not defined by its property and its land and the buildings and structures on the land. The community of Los Osos is defined by the people who live here. That's who we're building this project for, the people who live here and our children and our children's children. So that question is cost and or funding and financing a component of the wastewater project report?
Mr. Buskey.
The cost is, however, the financing, you know, I'm going to have to look into that one. I don't believe it is. I think that that's a separate action, but I'll check in because I really don't know about the financing. I know it's a big concern of mine.
Okay, Mr. Barrow.
Hello, I'd like to talk about the bay and the birds and the wildlife. I've been getting back into jogging to get myself in shape to fight the good fight. And while doing that, I usually jog around the peninsula. And yesterday I was doing my longest 7-mile jog, and I noticed this guy on a bicycle came whizzing down around the beach, and all the brants just flew away. All the wildlife just completely disappeared. So all the people that came after him didn't get to enjoy them. And I just want to remind everybody that this planet is not just for human beings. It's for the animals that live here, too. And we have to respect their space. And my belief is that if an animal is somewhere, they got there first, you need to go around them and give them their space, especially if they're wild, because they're here in our bay wintering, trying to get the strength for these huge migratory flights that they take. And so I'm going to ask everybody that goes down around the bay, and that's boaters too, that they should respect the wildlife. Give them a chance to have their space. They're afraid of us, and they're afraid of us for good reasons. And they know better than to stay close to us. If you walk very slowly around the bay and you stay away from the water, the brant will come right on the beach where they call it gritting. And that's what they're doing. They're helping to digest the food that they ate during the day. So this is not a lot to ask, but you really need to know that if you're walking around wildlife, even if you're walking around a raccoon or something.
And Mr. Young, after I'd finished my comments, which were essentially that we are not polluting the bay, Mr. Young insisted that he knew that the oysters are the type species, the test species for pollution, and that they're essentially the canaries in the gold mine from a biological perspective for pollution. I didn't have a chance to at the time, but I would have told him that, well, we tried canaries, but their cages rusted shut, so we really couldn't use them. So that's why we went on to oysters. But his major point was that while he did not acknowledge what I was saying, he essentially indirectly acknowledged it by saying that the rainy season, that the oyster farms have the biggest close down in the rainy season. Of course, I wasn't debating him. I had finished my 3 minutes of public comment, and so I couldn't really respond to that, but his argument was that yes, we are polluting the bay, and that was his proof. In fact, he seemed to think that his being a lawyer was a good answer, a counter to my citing an actual scientific presentation. Well, it is a rainy season right now, and the SOL complaints have been randomized to what were to have been 50, but are to, in practice, about 35 individuals. And at no point did the Water Board see it proper to identify as potentially the more relevant way to assumedly correct any wrong situation by focusing
on locations that are either close to the groundwater or actually close to the bay. So here we are, the rainy season's over. If there is damage that's taking place during a rainy season, we've missed this year, and we're still mired with 35 innocents representing everybody in the prohibition zone, having to deal with the harassment of a government agency acting as both a prosecutor, judge, executioner, etc. That was my point. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Perlman. Mr. Dugan.
Major B, and I think right off the bat, I'm going to tell you that if this is overturning the courts, if they strike it down in the courts, go without it. As if you weren't going to do it. Why? Because you can pick your sites or your system, and then we don't have to wait to have some kind of election. So it'll really cut down the time that's involved here so you can narrow the scope. Let them knock down Nature B. It takes an anchor and a weight off your neck. Put your best system forward, your best sites forward. If it passes review from regional and all the other authorities, it's a faster job. It's what you want. You already stated your positions, what you wanted. We all have a vision and outlook. And go for part of their plan or their study, and we don't get anything of it. And that's all across the board. And one more thing, I think we clarified what we were talking about, and that'll come up later as far as information gathering. That's something I'm doing constantly, and I can share it with the board at any time. So, thank you. Oh, one more thing. There is one of the big talks about in dissolution is that people, they're trying to impress upon LAFCO or the county that people can't attend these meetings and they have to be afraid. This is a contrived political thing. You should not be afraid. But I suspect that somewhere along the line, if somebody actually makes real complaints to the CSD and maybe have a sheriff show up and so they can feel a little safer, then fine. But I don't feel as if people should use that as a political move to say they can't come down here because they have to fear for their physical well-being. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Mr. Ricano is next.
Thank you, Honorable Board, staff, friends. Please excuse me being a little bit casual this evening. I'm just here doing some work and listening mostly, but I felt compelled to speak. If you go, you know, I had a friend who was taking studies in Berkeley once, and I sat in on her class, and it was African history. And one thing about Africa is that it's hard to say what kind of a person an African would be because the place is so big and it covers so many different places. There were all different types of people from Africa, you know, just very varied. And Los Osos' situation is a lot like that as far as water quality goes. There are a lot of different on-site conditions that are very varied throughout Los Osos. So there is the possibility of using something like a piranha in some places and other places actually hooking into a regional plan. Now, if you look at what's going on in Morro Bay right now, they're having some problems with their funding. They're having problems with infrastructure, and they're having problems with reserves. You know, and a regional integrated plan, of course, makes so much sense because new funding sources become available. And it's not just Los Osos that's pinching pennies at this point. You know, this is a regional problem, like I've always said, and there are regional solutions. As far as the pollution, it's really cut and dried what's happening on the Central Coast to the Ocean Outfall Group's mind. You are having a little bit of leach fields that are going through Baywood Fine Sand, sands that people pay a lot of money for in filters. In Morro Bay, they are dumping straight into the water with a waiver. They still got a waiver. They're trying to get more waivers. Recently, the otters were seen to be having problems. There's great pressure by the environmentalists on this whole coast now. And And the problem with the newspaper article the other day in the Tribune is they were saying, oh, well, you know, there are domoic acid is getting these otters and there's chemicals. Well, both chemicals and domoic acid are being caused by that outfall in Morro Bay County, and that's why we're here. And I thank you for this opportunity to address you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Rosenthal.
Rachel Rosenthal, Los Osos. I made a mistake because I just wanted to ask about something that was on the consent agenda, so I guess I can't. All right. It's about what was approved. I didn't know it was approved, so I wanted to hear about it. It was this Earthship system at the fire at the water yard for something like $12,000. It was a contract that was approved via the consent agenda for Earthship alternative septic system. And I'm a little bit shocked because the Piranha, which I hope when somebody who's not under the three-minute gun, could you repeat the invitation to the public to come see it? Is it open to the public tomorrow at 9 a.m.? I got to sneak a peek preview, and it's very interesting, and I really thank you for doing that, and thank Mr. Wickham and the Piranha people. And I thought he put it in at no charge. Is that true? And yet we're paying these Earthship is coming in for $12,500. Is that true? That's my question. So that's very generous and honorable of Mr. Wickham, and he's teaching everyone about this. So,
Mr. Buskey, do you want to explain what's going on for that part?
First of all, the speaker's comment about Mr. Wickham's generosity is you just can't describe in words how generous this is. I think there's a lot to be said for a win-win-win-win-win because there's going to be something proved here that we're very, very optimistic about, including the state board's investment in on-site advanced systems, too. So, yeah, it's a pretty good deal. And the really good thing of this is one of those things where if you viewed it as a bet and he's saying that in a year you got to pay me, that'll be the one of the, that would be a great bet to lose, wouldn't it? So we're hoping to lose that bet with him and pay him. So after a year, we do reimburse if the system's proved to work, and that's just generous too. The other thing that goes unsaid is the data that's going to be generated. Can't say enough about that. That is really, that's a gold mine just sitting there waiting to be tapped. Now I'm getting there. You know me. I can't say anything short way. But Earthship, what the Earthship is, a non-discharging system that comes out of New Mexico. And we're going to be piloting that down at the water yard because it's an area where we have high groundwater. And the other reason why is because it does not discharge into the aquifer. We use, it's kind of like a mini ponding system, I guess you could say. Because we use vegetation, teaching our crews what to look for. So if we have folks that want to come down and observe, I'm sure that they would have no problem letting them observe. Of course, we'll have to have safety issues and stuff like that on board. But basically, it is a constructed type of system where we're going to have to excavate the site, put in a liner, the gravel, the materials. Normally, on pilot programs, you don't run into people who are as generous as Piranha and Mr. Wickham. It's really kind of an exceptional thing.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Swanson?
Keith Swanson, Los Osos. I'll just make a comment again about as far as having counsel here is that I think we should probably look at least for the meetings here, if we just need legal authority,
to oversee the meeting, that I think we can save some money with Mr. Seitz or someone like that and be looking into that instead of, I don't know if Mr. McLennan's online now or not, but someone's sitting there making a lot more than Seitz was making. I had a question regarding Mr. Wickham brought up something about the prohibition zone and how we're just kind of hampered by that and by the fact that we have potential for doing different types of technologies and the fact that the county is actually the permitting agency for the septic tanks. Did they, regional board, take over the permitting of those septic tanks now, or is that still with the county inside the prohibition zone? Or something's just not right, and I think we need to get rid of that. I will have to agree with Mr. Dugan regarding Measure B. I think it is a weight that needs to go away. I think its point was to stop the construction of a wastewater project in the middle of town. It will open up for outside of town. So even though I do agree with Mr. Dugan, he changes his mind so much, so it might be different next time. And I just want to remind the community and remind this board and remind the staff that we wouldn't be in the position we are today if they had not started construction. The financing issues would be different. Everything would be different had they waited. So I blame this all on the board. They may say something different. And it's also curious that no dreamers are here tonight. And my reasoning for that is they think this is a done deal, that you're going to be dissolved. And they thought that the recall was a done deal and wasn't going to happen. So that's it. Thank you, Stan, Richard, and Gordon.
Thank you. Mr. Margetson?
Richard Margetson. I want to go back to a comment I made earlier tonight, but I didn't get to elaborate on. Anyone watching, the contributions to the recall committee by Barnard, $10,000 from a company. It might not be illegal, but it's got to be disturbing. And I want to put it in context of, what if right now we knew that before the election, Ripley Pacific had contributed $10,000 to the recall committee, and this gentleman from Piranha had contributed $10,000 to the recall committee. Would the other side be up in arms about that? Those two contributions should bother everybody in this community, no matter what side you're on. It's just disturbing. And as far as Mike Jones' comment about people standing in line when he was at the polling place, we haven't done enough investigation on this at this point, but before the election, there were almost 10,100 registered voters. And after the election, when the rolls were purged, the number was 9,700. I'm just wondering if some of those 400 were Barnard, Monterey Mechanical, or possibly Whitaker, employees that had moved to the district, re-registered, which is very easy to do, and voted for no on recall and no on Measure B. And again, I'll say it, and I've continued to say it. It's been 6.5 months since the recall election, and there's no former board member here at the podium again that makes 6.5 months straight that they have not attended a committee meeting or been at a board meeting. But you'll see them at any court case coming up, sitting in the courtroom. That's my 3 minutes. Thank you.
I interrupted you if you had any final thoughts.
I had one last quick comment. The notion has been out there that property values are high in this community, and that for that reason we should be able to afford whatever comes down. Equity and property values, for a lot of people, don't equate an ability to repay a loan that they may have to take out on their property to do it, or the ability to pay the monthly 205. There's a big difference there. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor?
Gwen Taylor, Los Osos. I hope those people who are thinking that they are winning when they have a RCSD dissolved remember what the county did not do, what the county did do, and what you are losing if we lose and have no longer our own determination as far as a CSD governing our community is concerned. You're losing more than you're gaining. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Payne?
Good evening again, board staff, public that's left here and those at home. I'm back, Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. At one of the meetings about the CDOs were for an average-sized family, well, it was 30 years before 1980, I should say, average-sized family with adequately sized tank was not unreasonably long. Some people think septic tanks are obsolete. They've been around for so long. One of the statements he makes here is there's a good reason why in this age of advanced technology, the septic tank is still in use. The reason why, it works. It reduces solids as much as 80%. And these on-site wastewater treatments that we have in service at this time also dilute the nitrates in the groundwater. It's proven by the Brown and Veatch study. It's 6 feet under the existing leach field with 170 houses going into it. The leachate had a lower concentration of nitrates than the groundwater under it. So if we quit using septic tanks or pump our effluent out of town, we will no longer dilute the upper aquifer. And the other thing is, if we have to pump it back with a purple pipe, why don't we just leave the septic tanks in place and use the leach fields? They're doing a good job anyway, and we would not risk liquefaction with 800,000 gallons of water at Broderson. Anyway, thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak this evening? Mr. Sparks.
Julie Biggs appeared before this community in September during an election. She's a lawyer. She presented very pro-recall, pro-Measure B information. AGP aired it over and over and over and over again, week and a half before the election. This board hired Ms. Biggs with no public input. You settled 5 different cases all at once and hired her and settled for approximately $500,000. Litigation with Measure B, she's working on, billing hours. If we want to talk about things that people consider distasteful, certainly Bernard and contributions are distasteful, but it's not the only thing, in my opinion, that's extremely distasteful about that whole election. So let's make that clear. As far as Mr. Markinson's comments, board members served for almost 7 years for this community and doing what they felt, I'm sure they felt was best. I certainly hope Measure B is struck down tomorrow. I certainly hope that you choose not to appeal it. I certainly hope it's cause for your litigation with Taxpayers Watch in May to be settled and stopped so that we can stop paying Ms. Biggs and that the other public waste is settled as well and that we stop paying these, excuse my language, the damn lawyers, particularly Ms. Biggs. Thank you.
Just one clarification for the record, Mr. Sparks. Mrs. Biggs did volunteer her time for Measure B, and I did get that clarified because I wasn't clear, but she volunteered her time, and that was not part of the settlements, and that was not part of her fees. So just want to put that on the record, but thank you.
Quality Control Board staff last week. It was a meeting on good terms. We even talked about when we get that sentence back in our letters about these are the enforcement options which will be held for a time when we see that you're really not making progress, something to that effect. You know, that sentence was always in the previous letters. We could thump you upside the head if we wanted, but you're making progress, so we won't. And hopefully we'll get that little sentence back in our letters soon. This is encouraging. This is the kind of thing we'd want to be looking at, is options and outside-the-box thinking, and we're there. And thanks to Director Fouché and all the work on the water ops and wastewater committees. Critical, critical work. Thank you.
Okay. Director Tecker? I'll go a little bit on this same line as Chuck, just in that one of the sentences that is in all the letters from the regional board was circumstances beyond control of the district. And what we've done tonight with Piranha and Earthship is put something in control of the district. And the regional board sort of deterred the other board from looking at remediation for the other sites, for the ACL sites, and said, keep your eye on the prize. Get that sewer built. Don't waste any time or any money on remediating the sites. And then come this fall, $6.6 million was levied against the board, only $60,000 of it for a violation of the time schedule order, the 1st of October through the 6th of October, where we only suspended work. Our intention was to get back to work after we had an inventory of how much pipe was in the ground and what our timetable was for moving the sewer. But the rest of the money was from violating since 1999. And even the best intentions of the old board towards remediation, inquiring about a piranha system some years ago, don't waste your time. Well, now look what we're wasting. Mr. Sparks' comments. We're having to hire attorneys to defend those actions that we didn't waste our time. Well, we're putting it in our control by taking these systems and taking some of the pollution out. Doesn't negate the need for a sewer. We need to be managing our water. We need to be moving the water. It's not about move the sewer. It's about move the water. Stop drawing from the lower basin. Stop dumping in the upper basin. Stop leaching into the bay. It's about move the water. Measure B is to be heard tomorrow morning. Tomorrow. Do you know what time, anybody? Sorry, don't know what time that's going to be heard. And in a tie and a suit, and he donated $10,000 to the low-income assistance fund. It's kind of contradictory. Low-income assistance versus save my job. It's just an irony that popped out with this information. Because it doesn't matter how many times you donate $10,000 to the low-income assistance fund, that sewer was unaffordable. $10,000 wasn't going to save one family. It wasn't. So I'm proud of this board. I'm proud of our progress. I'm proud of our proactive approach. And we'll be back next week to do some more business. Thanks.
Vice President Fouché.
Thank you. It's pretty late. I know everybody wants to go home, myself included. I'll just touch on just quickly remind people to think about the condition of our water operations department, our utility department, our infrastructure that is sorely in need of updating and replacing, and how long it's been since any of that's been touched. The fact that we don't have a sewer system in this town has been a topic of discussion for 30 years. The fact that a lot of our roads are in disrepair. All those funds come from the county to do work in this town. And just think about what hasn't been done for years and years and years in this community by the county. So if at least we have a little bit of control by having a CSD, those funds have to come here, and we direct those funds to where we want to put them. And at least there are some improvements coming. They've been recognized, and we are moving to fix the deficiencies in our infrastructure in this community that hasn't been done for decades. Other than that, everybody have a good evening, and please, 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 please conserve water as much as you can. Thank you.
Thank you. My final comments, I have two comments, and one of them, I do appreciate your comments, Mr. Sparks, and for you being here tonight. I think we need constructive criticism, and I always appreciate it. I do want to voice my opinion on legal actions. And this is, I just looked at our list again. And this isn't, I've noticed there's a couple missing. 12 out of the 15 lawsuits that had to be that are filed right now would not have occurred. 12 out of the 15 would not have occurred if we had not gone to construction 20 working days before an election. And that is a fact. There's no opinion about it. And that's the most heartbreaking thing for us up here to stand. Do you think, I know for myself, it breaks my heart that we have had all these legal bills. 20 days would have made the biggest difference in the world. And that is the heartbreaker for all of the community to have to bear by the way we are dealing with our problems. That's why we need everybody to come to these meetings. You can't be sitting at home stabbing us in the back. It's not going to help us. You got to come here and show up and participate. You know, I don't know him, but he wrote the funniest article about pet poop. And it's hilarious. You have to read it, but it's talking about scooper bags. Bring your plastic bags when you walk your dogs. And he was just calculating how much poop they collected out of the Elfin Forest, dog poop, that ends up draining to the bay with the fecal coliforms and the waste. And at this rate, about half ton of turds are deposited in the Elfin Forest each year. That's 1,000 pounds, folks. The community cannot sustain this kind of pollution. And he goes on, lately it seems as though locals have taken great pride in leaving unsightly smelling polluting poop around the forest. This responsible behavior does great harm in polluting Morro Bay with fecal matter and causing high bacteria counts. Pet poop is even indicated in the die-off of sea otters. So just take your bags with you. I take my plastic bags every morning when I walk my dogs, and it's not too bad. You have to do it. It's just the right thing to do. And his final comment is, please remind your dog-owning neighbors to pick up their Fido fecals. It's a great article, and I just wanted to call attention to it because I thought it was in the spirit of helping pollution. So thanks and good night.